The trailer for It is terrifying and has already been viewed over 29 million times. It's pretty clear that everyone is excited for the film, and so is Factory Entertainment, who have just announced their latest collectible, a highly detailed statue of Pennywise from the classic movie.
Tim Curry's likeness of the sewer-dwelling clown is hauntingly immortalized in this 15-inch tall recreation of the character, as seen in the popular roadside scene where he waves while holding floating balloons. Best of all, the statue features audio of your favorite lines from the film.
It's available to order now at www.factoryent.com. And if you enter coupon code Blumhouse during checkout, you'll save 10% on this or any other horror-related collectible, including their Nightmare on Elm Street Freddy statue.
Ooh, they have a wide range of products you're sure to love, from properties like Game of Thrones, Back to the Future, Friday 13th, and more, including their just-announced San Diego Comic-Con exclusives.
Again, www.factoryent.com, coupon code Blumhouse during checkout to save 10% on their horror-related collectibles.
Okay, and welcome to episode number 55 of Shockwaves. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Galuzzo. Sitting with me is Mr. Elric Kane.
It's like old times.
Like, oh.
Oh, you're right, guys.
Yeah, because we've got Rebecca McKendry here.
Hi.
We are down a man.
I'm officially going to call this our 200th episode, even though I'm not using any mathematical
Why?
Equation.
Wait, no, we're five away from that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
I'm calling it.
Don't call it.
All right.
For those of you confused, he's referencing our old show, Killer Pivy, which was just the three of us for 140 episodes, and then we became Shockwaves here on Blumhouse.com.
Okay. We got to do something special for that one, 200.
We will. Well, it's five episodes away, so we'll try to figure it out.
I'll bring cake.
Cake.
Cookie, love it. Giant cookie.
I'll bring peanut butter.
But no.
Thanks, Elric. You're funny.
The assassination of Becca.
Oh, my God. No. So welcome to episode 55. Once again, thanks to all of you guys for your support previously. Hit us up on social media. Shockwaves Pod is the Twitter, and then we're on Facebook as Shockwaves. Also on Facebook is the wonderful Shockwaves Horror Movie Club group.
I love them.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. We didn't start it. It was started by our listeners, and there's a lot of wonderful interaction there that we kind of chime in pretty regularly on. And if you haven't, please rate and review us on iTunes. I've noticed a lot of you started doing that as of late, and we appreciate it. So that is business underway.
We also have a snazzy Instagram.
We do, which mostly Ryan runs because he's all about the Instagrams,
which I think
is also Shockwave. No, it's Shockwave Podcast, the full thing on there. So hit us up on any one of those and, like us, share it, spread the word. Speaking of spreading the word, I have to mention this right at the top of the show. Elric and I got here a little early today and decided to go trekking out for coffee to my favorite place, Intelligentsia. And first of all, the barista recognized me from my other show with Tony Giles, Two Dudes Talking, and we convinced him to listen to this.
That's great.
So hopefully you're listening, dude. Mm-hmm. But even cooler is we're walking down the street on Sunset Boulevard this kid named, what's his name again? Nicholas Wagner came running up to us because he recognized us as Shockwaves. And he doesn't even live here. He's in town from Virginia.
What?
Yeah.
He's from my neck of the woods.
Exactly. We mentioned that. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe that it's you guys. Like walking down the street.
You guys just became his celebrity sighting. Like some people come to LA to see
But the way he waved to Rob, I thought
he thought I knew him. No,
so I was like, oh, who are we talking to now? And then the guy was like, oh, I listen to Pearson, man. I listen to you on and oh my God. And he's just like,
it was so
tongue-tied.
Yeah.
It was kind of cute.
That is awesome.
It was super cool. And
is he just out here for vacation?
I think so. I think he said he was looking into maybe moving. He's a filmmaker. He actually gave me a copy of his film, which I have here, and it's called Shelter for the Bloodstained Soul.
Ooh, I like that. The art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to check that out, but I figured we couldn't start this up. This just happened, so I felt like we had to give him a shout out at the top
of
the show.
Nick Wagner, that's awesome.
So I hope this film is as awesome as this freaking cover.
Yeah, that cover is intense, man. Like, I want that on a t-shirt.
I want a t-shirt that says, I'm a web celebrity.
Oh, Elric, you are. And the other thing I wanted to bring up right at the top, I don't have much to talk about movie-wise. I have the Mummy franchise, so I'll get to that in a little bit. But last week, I went to an event here in Los Angeles called Rendezvous, which is a once-a-month event over at the Hyperion Tavern over here in Hollywood. And basically it's I mean, it was always described to me. I just never went. I think Ryan's gone quite a couple of times. But basically they show – it's a little tiny bar and they show like – some old weird movie, usually on VHS, projected on the wall. And then after there are a list of DJs that play like soundtrack music and things of that sort.
Oh, I've heard of this. I met somebody who runs it, like one of the yes. DJs I've met.
Yes. I went because Tony Giles, who does all the damn fine podcast stuff, all the soundtrack stuff, is in town and he wanted to go. And the movie they were showing was called Ring of Darkness from 1979. Never been released on DVD, never coming out on Blu-ray. And it's, I don't think this is wrong to say, but I believe the issue is that it's a very Exorcist-ish sort of movie, but with like Exorcist meets like Suspiria. Like there's a coven of satanic witches, I think. It's kind of hard to follow, to be honest. But I think the girl, the main girl in it, I think the issue is that there's underage nudity, which is preventing it from ever coming out. So you have to go see it in a CD bar projected on a wall from a VHS, apparently. But the whole point of them showing it is because they also released a soundtrack of it on vinyl by Stelvio Cipriani. I hope I said that right. This is the guy that did the score to Tentacles. But more importantly, I'm watching the film, which is kind of out there, and the opening theme immediately, I'm like, yeah, I'm buying that vinyl. So be it. But then the rest of the music is all Pieces. And apparently
Pieces is in the soundtrack of Pieces?
It's the soundtrack to Pieces.
Oh,
the movie,
wow.
The 1980 movie. Yeah,
they literally stole the soundtrack?
Well, they didn't steal it. From what I understand, Tony explained to me that he scored this movie. And I think, as is the case with a lot of that early Italian stuff, once you did one movie, it could be used as or license as library music for future movies. So apparently the original score to Pieces did not work at all. And I didn't realize this, but I guess the Grindhouse Blu-ray has a version you could watch of the original score, and it just doesn't work at all. So instead of hiring another composer, I think they licensed this, you know, previous music. It's, you know, the Tentacles main theme that they always play is on like a dozen Italian movies. I just got the Paul Naschy collection and I put on one of the discs and it was the music from Tentacles. So a lot of that Italian music was definitely recycled and relicensed and reused. But that was the main reason I went there, was for that. And I mean, the place used to be, from what I heard, it's tiny, but the atmosphere is really great and a lot of fun, and the music was great. And it used to be kind of a leather bar.
Nice.
The stories I've heard is it was cruising in there at one point, and there are still remnants of the cruising period of this the Hyperion Tavern.
Definitely, if you put a fluorescent light on there.
Oh my God! Yes, there. If you look in certain spots in certain corners, like the DJ booth, you will see. You will see paintings of abs and leather. Nice. It's quite something.
Wow.
But I had a blast. And if you're in Los Angeles, that might be something worth checking out at some point.
Rendezvous. Right on, you know?
So yeah, Rendezvous. All That's right. Cool. What have you guys? What about you guys? What's been up?
Well, I watched, I think, one of the same movies that you did. I watched 1988's The Unholy.
Oh, yes.
The new Vestron video Blu-ray.
I've already put it out of my head, but go ahead.
I loved it when I was young. Is it bad?
Yeah, see, so that's the same thing. I had the same thing as Elric. I loved this movie when I was young. I thought it was so awesome. I had these really fond memories of the creature effects and how gory it was. And then I rewatched it this week. It still feels like Euro trash. It was always really trashy feeling, and it still definitely has this kind of Euro trash vibe, but man, that is one slow-moving film at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I realized why. Dave pointed this out while we were watching it. There is hardly any soundtrack. There is very, very little under music. There's just like literally no soundtrack. And all of the majority of the movie is priests having these really secretive conversations with each other.
Yeah.
And they're very dry and they're all in kind of more religious vernacular. And so it was not nearly as exciting. There was still like the hot redhead who showed up half naked and tried to seduce people, but not nearly as exciting as I remember. I did like all the scenes when they go into like the satanic club.
Yeah.
And which is kind of like I guess it's supposed to be a 1980s Grand Guignol. And the guy who runs it is, you know, this like sleazy showboat guy who is just there to do the show. But the devil seems to be coming out. So there were some interesting things. By far, the most interesting sequence of the movie was there's one moment where somebody is going into hell, like he's falling into hell. And then he sees like 30, maybe 40 seconds worth of montage footage of just really fucked up stuff. There's like a guy drilling his teeth, and there was just like all of this weird stuff. That by far, I was like, whoa, this movie just got crazy. It was like like an Event Horizon thing. Like when they discover the footage in Event Horizon, you're like, what did I just watch? It was that moment. And then it went back to like the dry stuff. The monster was very rubbery. Kind of, it moved like the monster from Poltergeist 3, where it just kind of like flopped back and forth a little bit. Still, I had fun once the monster came in and once it picked up a little bit. But yeah, the first, I'd say, three quarters of the film were a much more of a slog than I recall from my youth.
Yeah, the redhead is super hot and like, I mean, amazing looking. And she shows up when she pops up, and there's other scenes. Her name is Nicole Fortier. I mean, you know, and you could see her boobs. So there's something about like
there's full nudity in some of it. Yeah,
in a church with a priest, and you're like, this is so long, and I don't know. But yeah, it was just such a slog. I was so bored, and it's like an hour and 40 some odd minutes, and it just felt like it went on forever. So there's moments here and there, like you mentioned, like all the stuff at the club, because I think it's like a girl that worked at the club, like ran away to a priest or something like that.
She was in the church. She was living with the priest. She ran away to the club and sold herself to the devil, body and soul, but for some reason was still a virgin. So I guess he never made good on the promise. And then she decides to return back to the church, but whenever she talks to one of the priests die.
It's the most unexciting sale to the devil I've ever heard.
For all the work that the devil was putting in on this one, there was a lot of just kind of meandering around going, is he the one? He might be the chosen one. He could be the chosen one. Are you the chosen one? And it was just kind of like, let's move along, guys.
I think it's worth it for this gal, but otherwise...
See, as a kid, you don't really think about pacing.
Yeah.
Like, when you're young, I don't think you watch a movie with pacing even on your mind. I don't remember ever thinking about how slow...
No, but this caught my attention.
I mean, it's
showing them pictures of topless...
But I remember it being... I do remember it being sexy and kind of freaky and atmospheric, and the weird scene where something comes from outside, he's inside a church and
that's
he's, like,
the
sweating.
At the end.
I remember it being really cool, but it doesn't surprise me. Because when we watch these things at 14, we're being satisfied in an easier way than now. Where we're,
we have no concept of time back then.
Yeah, really.
That's the weird like thing about revisiting stuff. Yeah.
I will say, if you were into 80s religious horrors, and there was definitely kind of a grouping of these. There was one with Lou Diamond Phillips, I remember.
The First Power. That's a good one.
I like The First Power. Yeah, there was definitely like a grouping of these kind of priest fight the devil films that came out in the 80s. If you're into those, you got to watch this just for completionist sake. And again, it does have a copious amount of nudity and a rather, you know, interesting monster at the end. And about 40 seconds of hell footage that I was like, whoa.
I watched, we were finishing up, obviously we did the Code Red episode with Bill Olson for
Great interview.
That was, it was interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like you learned something about
the guy.
I did
enjoy it. He's a comedian. That's what I learned.
He's a comedian, at least in his mind.
Did he wear the banana suit?
He did afterwards for us, yes.
Yes.
Well, I was pretty impressed by that. He actually like carries that with him, like to do. I mean, that's
like he brings it with him everywhere just in case.
Yeah. I mean, look, John Wayne Gacy aside.
Wow.
And anyone willing to like dress up as a banana, like no matter what you think of them as, if they're willing afterwards to dress in a banana suit and saying they actually get joy from, you're like, how bad can that person really be? Like, real. And then, you know, John Wayne Gacy is a clown. And
well, hearing him say like, well, it's funny. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny, too.
It's funny.
So that was fun. But so we had a couple like remnant things I watched from that. I also got to do the F This Movie with Patrick Bromley.
Oh, right.
We're all big friends. And we did a Sybil Danning-thon called Sybil-thon.
Yes.
So for some of you, that will be worth listening to. I know not everyone is in love with the Sybil concept as I am.
Elric was texting me pictures of Sybil Danning.
Hey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? But I had never seen Julie, Darling. And it's really funny because I was waiting for the Blu-ray. I thought about seeing it a few months ago, when I can't remember if it was Brian or Patrick who kind of put me onto it, and it looked really fun. It's by Paul Nicholas, and it's by the guy who made my absolute all time number one prison movie, Chained Heat, which she's also in, and we talk about that on this episode. That movie's just utterly bonkers.
Yeah.
But this one is like a young girl trying to. This is a Code Red Blu-ray. It's a young girl who's kind of in love with her dad. Not in love with her dad, mostly. It's still kind of innocent, but borderline initially, and she doesn't really, her mom kind of is always getting in the way, overparenting her. And the dad is played by the lead in Tenebrae, Anthony Franciosa, you know, that actor. So it's really interesting already, like straight away kind of grabs you. And she sees her mother viciously attacked, and she's being raped like on the floor of the house. And Julie, this girl, has her gun grabs a gun from her wall. So mm-hmm. she's in her bedroom. She has her gun. Nice. She's a 14-year-old. Holds the gun
up. You know,
up.
Like you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like she's going to shoot the killer. The killer doesn't know, the guy doesn't know she's there. And then she goes, you know what? I'm just going to let it happen. And then the guy kills her mom and looks up. Doesn't quite see her. She kind of hides. And she's like, I get my dad all to myself now. This is this young 14-year-old girl mindset. She's like, ooh, now daddy's all mine. Well, she didn't know that daddy at the time was having an affair with Sybil Danning, who's now coming to be mommy. And holy shit, that's when it gets fun. Like, and Sybil Danning, interestingly enough, we talk about it a lot on that show, so I won't go too in depth. But what's funny is it's actually one of the most realistic kind of subtle performances by Sybil. It's like a very realistic new mother, a stepmother kind of role.
Wow.
But the younger girl it's bonkers. And there is a sex scene in this movie that is one of the most bonkers things you'll ever see, where the little girl is watching Sybil ride her dad kind of thing, and then imagines herself with her father nude.
Ew.
In the Man. Same sex scene, intercut, and you're like,
this is filthy.
Ew.
It's crazy. But it's actually, it's kind of, it is a nasty, almost Michael Winner vibe. But why it was so interesting is it kind of connects to last week's episode where I talked about those three films. This would have been the perfect fourth film. It would have actually been better than Lisa, to be honest, even though I think Phil's that worked for that show, you know?
Right.
But this movie is even more, to me, like sensational and just insane. So this one's, I would actually put it in the category of must get. Because Code Red, it's totally hit or miss. A lot of these labels that are making, you know, we talked about Vinegar Syndrome titles too recently. You know, these ones where you're like, I don't know, it's a crapshoot because I've never heard of this movie. This is an all-in purchase for me. Super fun. Flick that I think you guys would have fun with.
Wow, very cool.
Excellent.
What else you got, Becca?
So then I checked out All the Colors of the Dark, which I've always loved this movie. It's been a while since I've seen it. I had a DVD copy a while ago and heard that they were releasing this snazzy Blu-ray. And so I ordered the snazzy Blu-ray, really excited about it. Obviously, it was supposed to be a higher quality and everything. And then it wouldn't play in my region-free player. And I was totally bummed because I've never had this problem before. But whenever I try to play it, it says Region B player required. And I play Region B stuff all the time, so I'm really confused why it wouldn't work. But it put me in the mood regardless. That's more of a warning that it may not play in your region-free player if you buy the snazzy Blu-ray. But it put me in the mood, so I ended up going down to Eddie Brandt's and just renting it and watching it that way. So All the Colors of the Dark is a giallo film from 1972, Sergio Martino. But it doesn't function like a normal giallo film because you don't have like gloved killers, nobody's stalking models or anything like that. It is a woman who has like a really traumatic past, like I think she watched one of her parents die and her child died a little bit prior in a car accident. Mm-hmm. So she's got this traumatic past. She starts having these crazy haunting visions of like this guy with a knife chasing her and all this stuff. And all of her friends and coworkers are trying to help her. And one person is like, you should try vitamins. You just need some vitamins. And then one of her friends is like, no, you should try therapy. And then her neighbor is like, you should come to a satanic black mass. That will cure you. So she picks option C, I guess, which is like the most obvious.
She should have gone with the vitamins.
That's where you head. But she goes to the Black Mass, and while she's there, it's like this crazy, trippy Italian Eurotrashy scene. But then she can't escape it, and she kind of keeps getting more enwrapped in this cult. But at the same time, it's like infiltrating her brain, so it becomes trippy and hypnotic, and she can't gauge what's real and what's not. The score is amazing. It's beautiful visuals. Even watching it on a VHS tape from Eddie Brandt's, I was still just like, God, this is a gorgeous film.
Wow.
Does not get nearly as much love as it should.
Yeah, Martino in general in America, like compared to Argento and Fulci and Bava and everyone, he like is the least kind of discussed. But when I think of giallo, I think of Martino. Like he's the most consistently making giallo films.
And this one, it definitely feels more like something like Suspiria or The Beyond because it does, the beginning part of the movie functions as like a narrative storytelling. But as soon as she attends the Black Mass, the whole thing becomes stream of conscious where it functions like Beyond where it's just like, I don't know what I'm watching, but this is just brilliant. It really deserves a lot more credit than it is. It stars Edgewig Finch, whose name I'm going to say
wrong. She's the reason I watch most of his films. Strange Vice of Mrs. Vard is one of my all-time favorites. Yeah. And he's really good visually, I think. You know?
And this one, it's beautiful. And this is one I'm always shocked it does not get more love. So definitely, there's a DVD, there's a blue now if you can get it to work, but definitely
you
check out
contact,
All the Colors of the Dark.
Shameless, right?
It's Shameless. I'm going to email them
find
and
out
be
what
like,
the deals
it
that
won't
is.
Play.
Interesting.
So that's All the Colors of the Dark.
Yep.
Cool. Oh, Rick, what else you got?
This one's a bummer, dude. Like, you know these movies that are on our lists of, like, cult movies that you're waiting for years and years and years to find, and then you finally see it? This is one. It's always been called, like, one of the long-lost classics of the zombie genre. There was never a good version of it. It's Zeter. And it was also called Revenge of the Zombies with the most misleading cover art in the history of cinema. I mean, there's misleading, and then there's like, yeah, you're not even in the realm of possibility.
I thought the cover is just like a guy crouching
on
the floor.
Yes, that's the Zeter cover. You're totally right. Black and white cover. So I actually thought it was a black and white film until I saw it. The other version, Revenge of the Zombies, looks like a Return of the Living Dead monster zombie like ripping through the pavement, and it's Revenge of the Zombies. Looks huge, right? Looks exactly
like... I never thought of it as a zombie film. It's like Mad Scientist.
Yeah, it ends up being... Well, that's what I mean. So this title. So anyway, I'd always heard it was kind of a classic, but the cool thing about this movie, there's some really good things. For one, it's Poopy Avati, and that's what got me really excited because I love house... Yeah, sometimes you have to go Poopy Avati.
You have to say...
You got to just slip one out.
what year is this movie?
I don't know. I thought it was after House of the Laughing Windows. So he made House of the Laughing Windows.
I did a flashback about it on the site.
Z-E-D-E-R.
If you go to Blumhouse and search Zeter, I know I've written about it before.
Z-E-D-E-R? Zeter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the reason it was a big deal, though, is not Code Red, but there's, you know, the brother company, which is Scorpion. Which is basically like kind of the Criterion version of Code Red, I guess. They put it on for sale. And for me, that was huge because I've read about this movie for literally years going, oh, it's always talked about in such high esteem. Yeah, that cover's just totally
this
cool.
Is the one. Yeah, Revenge of the Dead is the cover.
Total fucking horseshit, that cover. Like, that couldn't be the Rebecca, because that couldn't be further.
Yeah, I've only seen the one of the guy kneeling.
So,
I've seen that cover. So I never even associated it.
It's 1983.
It looks like Return of the Living Dead. It says the dead shall rise, and it's a zombie. Okay, so just for the record,
that's not the movie at all.
Nothing like that ever happens in the movie. Not even
I'm going to add this to my list of me and Josh Miller remaking movies with cool covers.
Yes, this
should be the cover.
The cool thing about this movie is it has an awesome setup. So the setup is there's this guy at the start, and his wife or girlfriend, I'm not sure, buys him this automatic typewriter, and he opens it up, and there's the ribbon from the previous owner, and he like reads this weird message where you can kind of see what the person had typed before him, and that kind of opens the mystery side of this movie. So the mystery side of this movie is really intriguing. He starts trying to track down. He goes to a place that like a library to get more information and talks to some man there, but then later hears that that guy can't have been the guy because he's been dead for years. It's that kind of slow building, but it's the kind of movie I was watching with Brian Sauer, and every 30 minutes, I told him, oh my God, you've got this, we got to watch this. Every 30 minutes, we were going, oh, well, I bet you it's going to be one of those movies where the last 30 minutes is so crazy that it makes this long effort to get there, like, totally rewarding.
I don't remember
Then we
that.
Went further, and I went, I bet it's the last 10 minutes, right. And I'm not even kidding. I swear, I said, man, I guess it's one of those movies where, like, the last minute has that crazy, memorable thing that you remember, and nothing happened. Nothing actually happened, like, at all. There's, like, a quick moment. Now, this is a very well-regarded movie. Like, you go to Letterboxd, it's mostly, like, 4-star. Like, everyone is seeing a classic in this so far that people, and I am exactly its target. Like, this is one of those movies where somebody's going to write to me going, oh, Rick, you're letting us down because it's like art house horror. Because House of the Laughing Windows is brilliant. Love that movie.
I love that
and
one
this has
so
all,
much.
This has the same kind of setup and vibe. So there's nothing wrong dramatically with it. It just is kind of, at a certain point, you're like, oh, okay, so no big scene, like no big zombie reveal. So it's basically the cool part as he goes deeper in the mystery without giving too much away. There's these zones scientists have kind of found, mixed with holy people, have kind of realized there's certain zones where maybe time kind of stands still and the dead maybe could rise in these certain areas. So you're waiting for that big moment when you're in one of those areas, and it just never really happens. There's a kind of a subtle little horror flourish at the end that's so kind of, you know, it's art house horror in a nice way, but not in a way that can ever legitimize the fact that it's $29.95, you know, on Blu-ray, and you've been waiting for it for years.
Okay, maybe I did agree with you, because I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but I wrote about it on the site when I did, and I wrote, it's a slow burn mystery film about science versus supernatural that doesn't answer many questions.
Yeah, it's got some cool ideas in it about, it's almost like a scientific version of, what would the zombie, if we could really document it, and we'd get camera crews there, and we'd be ready to see what happens, but it didn't deliver, and I'm sure somebody in here is going to tell me it's their favorite movie, and I totally appreciate that, because the tone is really on, and he's definitely an artist. I got to see more of his films, because I found all of the ones I've seen so far interesting, but it disappointed me.
House with Laughing Windows may be my favorite giallo film.
It's a great movie.
Like, it's almost at Suspiria level for me.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. But this one, I don't know. It's just funny because it's one I had seen photos of for years going, oh, I wonder what that one is.
And I really want to see that movie with the
I know.
I know. The zombie bursting out of the storm drain. That looks badass.
I mean, I get why you want someone to go to your movie, why you make that poster, but then that person is going to hate your movie.
Yes.
Like, you cannot like a movie where that's a poster. I mean, I actually like the other poster, the one below it, with just the Z, and it's like this cool, you know, that makes me go, ooh, what is, that's closer to what the movie is. But, you know, it just kind of fell flat. So, I mean, I definitely would encourage you to watch it, but not necessarily buy it blind.
And this is a Scorpion.
That is a Scorpion, release. A new one. It's a brand new release.
Is it released under Zeter or Revenge of the Dead?
Zeter, yeah. Okay. Wow. They might have some reversible art in there, but it was a bummer because I was so excited to see that one.
Wow. Sad.
Anything else, Becca?
I rewatched Dark Waters. Just because Severin just did this,
oh, the Italian one.
Gorgeous Blu-ray. So I
got
to
it too.
Go
I got
to
watch it. I'm gonna. They sold me on the show with Sam.
Yeah, it's still. I've been. I remember first seeing this movie like when I first started at Fangoria. They passed me that Fangoria book, like 101 films you've never heard mm-hmm. of, that Tony and Mike wrote, and it was one of them. And as soon as I saw like Lovecraft, okay, I'm watching this, and so I'd watched it like. Years ago when I first started at Fangoria, and it's definitely been one of my favorite ones. There's a whole essay I wrote about how much I love it on the Blumhouse website. But it was just awesome to rewatch, especially, I mean, Severin did such a beautiful job. It's a gorgeous film to begin with, and it just made it even more gorgeous. The film, definitely watch all of the bonus features, watch all of the interviews, because the film itself has such a fascinating story. Mariano Bagna, the filmmaker behind it, definitely had this wonderful vision for it. Ended up shooting it in the Ukraine right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and they had to stop shooting several times because coups kept breaking out, and he talks some there about how
sounds
there was
like Howling 2. Remember those Howling 2 stories?
Yeah. The Howling 2 stories. He talks on there about how there was one moment where tanks started rolling across, like while they were like heading to set, there were like all these tanks because coups had broken out everywhere. And so just absolutely fascinating stories about the restrictions of shooting and then what it was like shooting in that environment. But in general, because the movie is so wet, and we talked about this a little bit on one of our prior shows when we talked about it in Texas, because we talked about the water acting.
50, yeah.
But because there is so much water imagery in it, the way that they shoot the water, the way that they got the water to move, it's all just really fascinating.
Yeah, I'm going to try to watch that one on our break because that's it sounded like my bag.
Yeah, me too. Because I got that Blu-ray from Severin, but I haven't seen it since around the time Becca mentioned, which had to be what, like early to mid-90s?
It came out in 93. I don't think I saw it till maybe 2004 when I started at Fango. But yeah, it's just, it's phenomenal. And I do, it checks all of my boxes of like Becca's ideal horror film. Okay, there's nuns, female protagonist, Lovecraft, Oceanic Monsters. Okay, yeah, this it's like he made me a movie.
Good.
Right. No, you know, you're right. 2004.
Just need some bugs.
Four-ish sounds right. Because what I remember, there used to be a company called No Shame DVD.
Yeah, I remember.
Before the whole Blu-ray boom.
Which is, I have that DVD. Yeah. I will be giving it away in trivia tomorrow night.
Oh, no.
Well, I have the fancy Severin one now, so I'm giving my DVD to someone at trivia tomorrow night.
Well, somebody will walk away with a great package.
Because
I remember they did these amazing packages for all these Italian movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out of business. But, you know, obviously they're all coming out on Blu-ray right now. So
yeah. So definitely if you have not picked that one up, it is well worth a blind buy. Head to Severin and pick it up.
Dark Waters.
Dark Waters.
Beautiful.
Did you guys get sent Hack-A-Lantern?
No. Ryan has it.
Okay.
But now I'm intrigued by Hack-A-Lantern.
Okay. This is one of those guilty admission parts where you have to admit that you're not a real journalist or a film reviewer because I was falling asleep through much of this. So I'm not going to officially endorse or deny this movie. It's by Massacre Video. It was the third film of three films, the third film we watched that night.
So this is Hack-A-Lantern 3?
It's just called Hack-A-Lantern. It was the third movie in three movies we watched. So it was like super late at night. So I remember the setup clearly. And then I remember going in and out and in and out of the movie, and it seemed, you know, very fucking weird. It seems to be exactly what you would think it is from the cover and the 80s marketing. It is definitely being put out there. Yeah, look at what he's.
I want to say
very much the VHS box.
Oh shit, that looks amazing.
It's if you've seen every other Halloween movie ever made, then I guess you might as well watch this one now. That would be my box art for it.
See, that's what I would want that on a T-shirt, but not necessarily to watch. But now I'm intrigued enough to watch it.
It's not as clunky as a lot of SOVs. It actually looks pretty good. It actually to me looked like it was shot on film. So, but the setup was like a young boy. Yeah, that's the cover. Massacre Video's put it out.
Let me see.
On a Blu-ray. And
I liked the other one better. I mean, that's nice.
Yeah, the original cover is better.
It's a Blu-ray cover. Yeah.
It's a young boy is basically being kind of indoctrined to. He views like his grandfather's sacrifice, black mass kind of thing, kind of like what you're talking about earlier with all the colors of dark. And then it's then when he's grown up, like to be 18 or whatever, and they're gonna the night they're gonna indoctrinate him into the group on Halloween or whatever. Somebody is dressed like this weird creature on the cover and is knocking people off. But honestly, I would be doing it an injustice, so I'm gonna give it a thumb in the middle if I claimed that I had really seen this movie.
The Satanists are the victims. There's like a slasher with the satanic mass.
I think that at the end, that's where it was
that's
heading.
Genius.
I could be completely wrong.
Elric might be selling a much better movie.
Much better movie, yeah.
Okay, I'm making that
the
one.
The opening was pretty clunky, and the relationships and the grandfather stuff was just like, what the hell is this? But it was like, it's definitely one of those movies to watch with other people. I'm going to definitely give it another turn.
You're going to watch again?
I probably would, like with somebody. Like, you know what I mean? Like maybe on Halloween.
I don't know, man. I was at Brian's place last weekend, and I picked this up, and I looked at the back, and I was like, I don't know about this.
Just skip right to Haunted Ween. Oh my God, if you look up Haunted Ween, just for me. Haunted Ween is from Kentucky, and it is the first clip you'll get. There'll be some guys sitting around, kind of like a group of frat guys who like clean cars for money, and then they get messed up, and then some really bad Halloween kind of background horror. But their voices are to me, it was like one of the funniest things I've ever seen in movie. Their accents
is Haunted Ween like a legit '80s film, or
yeah,
is this like
a shot on video type one?
Oh, okay.
They got a re-release a couple years ago. Jose Prendes showed it once at Jump Cut, and it is. Bad, but also really funny.
Like, wow.
But it's the voices that are just, because that's why I like rural horror, you know, like suddenly this rural horror from Kentucky, the voices are, and the one guy is just like the most Kentucky voice you've ever heard possible. And,
20th anniversary, the best haunted party haunted movie of Ween. 2014.
So I'm going to call it now. Hack-A-Lantern and Haunted Ween is your double feature of the week. You will not survive.
Holy shit.
I know how to make fake blood, and I know a friend who will get naked on camera. Yeah. Let's make a movie.
And then I had to ask you guys, because I don't know how much we've talked about it, but I did see Slash the Musical, and you've seen Slash the Musical.
Oh, yeah, I went this week, yeah.
So, and you helped choreograph.
I did the choreography.
Did you do the little Michael Jackson moonwalk back, and he does the line? He does a little moonwalk?
I did not teach him to moonwalk.
Oh, no, I just meant, did you tell him to do that? I thought that was
pretty
cool.
No, that was part of the block. I assume that that's actually character work.
Okay, yeah, that's got to be a Sean Keller script
that's
moment.
That's a Sean Keller moment. No, I did the choreography. There were three main songs that I did all the choreography for. The opening number, which was Camp Doom, One Hot Summer, and then the fight scene between Paige and Petey Jurgens, I choreographed.
It was really fun.
It's a 45-minute musical play that's taking place here in Long Island. Not Long Island. We're not in Long Island. We're in Los Angeles. Written by Sean Keller, who's been a guest on Killer POV, and directed by Chelsea Peters, a.k.a. Chelsea Stardust.
Sean might be long overdue to be on this show.
I know.
Yeah,
in fact, maybe both of them. That could be fun.
Yeah. It's a brilliant homage to all the 80s, 80s slasher
especially
movies.
Especially Friday 13th.
Basically the stuff that we mentioned last week, summer camp kind of stuff, and kind of a play on it. It takes place in the 80s, and it's really, really funny. And there's a killer named Petey. What is his name?
Little Petey Jurgens,
who basically, they weren't paying attention, and he died. And
because they're all
it goes to the kids who died while everyone was fucking.
That's it. That's the song. There you go.
That keeps coming up. But the one part, I must admit, because I don't even think I'm necessarily the target for that, but I was smiling the whole time. I had a smile on my face because it was so familiar, and it was really fun to see. More than anything, it's always fun to see friends of yours just throwing themselves into art. And just doing it because we knew a lot of people on stage too.
Sean told me this idea maybe at the beginning of the year and the last at a bar. Just like, you know what? I've never done a horror musical, and it'd be like a summer camp. Telling me the whole idea. And the fact that several months later it happened with a cast and songs and fully produced is pretty amazing.
But it's when he bursts on the screen that I just completely loved it, because everyone is doing kind of the 80s thing, and it's funny and quirky, and he's the killer, and he's kind of, he looks like an awkward teenage Jason.
But he sings a song called Why Do They Make Me Kill Him?
Yes, but he sings it more almost like serious kind of almost opera thing.
Yes.
And it's so funny because of that. And he really nailed it. And so that was super fun to see a friend of ours in that context. And it's also the perfect length. I mean, it's, rather than seeing a 70 or 90 minute thing, it's like 40 minutes. You're still having fun when it ends and you walk out smiling and tell people. So I feel like this could be something that could totally travel, or he was saying you could do it in Vegas three times a night. I could see it in that context. So good job, because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Yay! Yeah. And if you look over on, let's see, where is it? There's a, I believe there's there's a slash the musical Facebook page. It's slash the musical.
Mm-hmm. And you can get the music.
The music's all on Bandcamp.
You could stream the music for free on Bandcamp. So if you want to just at least listen to what we're talking about, it's actually kind of fun to just hear the songs. And
you'll miss my snazzy dancing. But
I feel like that mask could be very cub-like from Jonas.
Yeah, it could totally.
Yeah.
But no, everyone is really good, and I think anyone listening to this show would totally get all the humor because it's all reference based, and you know.
Well, my favorite is when they reference. Wasn't there that girl in the camp that wasn't a girl?
Oh yeah.
And then they were like, "What do we call that? We don't have a name for it yet because it's the 80s."
Yeah.
There's so many great gags like that. So that's cool. Yeah. I really had a good time, and if you're in Los Angeles, definitely try to catch it. All right. Anything else? Because I'm going to tackle the Mummy movies.
Let's hear Mummies.
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's the weird thing is anytime one of these franchise happens, I think it's inherent in us as fans to be like, I just want to watch all the other movies now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So after the disappointment of the new movie.
And I know you mean creative disappointment, but do we know, has box office also been disappointed?
I was actually getting ready to Google that while he's talking because I suddenly was I want to pull up Box Office Mojo.
You
and
can.
See how
it was, it came in number two behind.
Oh, yeah, well, that's all right. If a Tom Cruise movie comes in number two, you've already lost.
Yeah, under Wonder Woman, which maintained.
Right.
Well, you know,
as it should.
Yeah, and again, that's the point of that is just stay true to the source material.
Yeah.
You know, like that was the problem with the other DC movies before Wonder Woman. Now they finally did one where they stayed true to it, and it's you know, rather than dropping dramatically the second week, it's word of mouth that it's good. And that's the thing with the Mummy is they didn't stay true to anything. They're just, you know, what's frustrating about it, you know, because I've seen a lot of mixed reactions. People were like, it's not as bad as everyone says and blah, blah, blah. Sure, it's not, but it's just – it's just too much of too many other movies I love that there's like nothing original about it. And, you know, and I like Tom Cruise. I've been watching all the Mission Impossible movies on the side just because I like those movies. But
also interesting that they launch this whole new world with the Mummy, which is not a character that necessarily people are that excited about from the old Universal properties. I mean, sure, there were successful movies made with Brendan Fraser, but it's like a weird one to launch with when you have Frankenstein, Dracula, Invisible.
Is that their pitch, though? Like, is it, well, let's start with the one that people remember from
maybe
10, 20 years ago, right? I guess.
I don't know, but do you really want to be associated with those? Like, the Brendan Fraser things I enjoyed, but I mean, they definitely kind of stand alone where they weren't the original Mummy. They weren't meant to be really scary.
Hard to know which one to go because Wolfman's not been that long either. There's been a Wolfman.
Yep.
We know there's continually
Untold.
Dracula versions. Yeah. And then Frankenstein is risky, but probably what I would go with.
Like that's if what I would have launched.
But there was no because they did. No, because they did a Frankenstein movie last. It had I can't remember. It had the guy
the Bernard Rose.
Harry Potter. Frankenstein.
There's Frankenstein. There's the one that
with Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Yeah. I guess you're right.
Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah. None of them have done that well.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the gamble. But you know what? Again, it's like, I don't know why they can't just stay true to the original material. And anyway, I went back to that original material because of the Universal Monsters, I'm not that huge a Mummy fan. Like, I remember Ryan saw it several months back and said, you know, it's kind of a boring,
it's boring.
It's a slog.
It's shot well, but that's about
it. Really is. And you know what? That's the thing. If I can take anything positive of this supposed dark universe that's coming, it's that it's given us every single one of the Universal Monster movies on Blu-ray. Mm. Right now, there's four sets. There's Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein, and now the Mummy. They'll probably put out Invisible Man and Creature soon. But what's great is they have the original movies and then all the sequels on, you know, in high def. And the original Mummy from 32, it's an interesting movie. The Mummy series, what I finally realized is the Mummy series is very similar to the Friday 13th series in that when you think of Friday 13th, you think of the hockey mask Jason, when in actuality, that doesn't happen until 3, and really the mother is the killer in the original. And the same with the Mummy, you think of Boris Karloff, and your image of the Mummy is the guy in bandages, and yet Boris Karloff only appears that way in the first 2 minutes of the original Mummy. He doesn't look like that at all for the rest of the movie. So there's no real Mummy in the Mummy. It's just the opening scene, and then for the remainder of it, he's got like the old age makeup, the Jack Pierce makeup. And, you know, he's this character, Omotep, that is trying to, well, it kind of changes streams halfway through. I think that's because of the production where, you know, he was cursed and he's trying to like reunite with his love and this whole deal. I still find it a little tough to get through, even though Karloff is amazing in it. I visually appreciated more than I ever had. Because like you said, it is a beautifully shot movie.
Yeah, the guy who directed Karl Freund was a very well-renowned cinematographer.
Sure.
So it made sense why visually it looked good, but
it
maybe why it's
pacing. It looks great, and especially on Blu-ray, it's just so fantastic. But really where the series picks up for me is the sequel. So that one was 1932, and then they didn't make the second one until 1940. So a whole 8 years later, they make The Mummy's Hand. And this is the difference. Now in all the sequels, it's not Imhotep, not the character that that Boris Karloff originated. They recycle the footage from the original movie, but the guy that's getting cursed is actually Karis. And Karis is the one that gets resurrected as the bandaged mummy. Mm. And then every subsequent sequel from there is him, the bandaged mummy, Karis. So The Mummy's Hand is the sequel. That one I actually kind of liked a lot because at least it had like a quirky, ironically enough, almost – not too comical, but like an Abbott and Costello type as the lead characters who find Karis, and they're trying to get this wealthy industrialist to finance their you know dig and find to get the body back and all that. And then really, it's by the third one, The Mummy's Tomb, where I forgot this Lon Chaney Jr. takes over the role.
How weird!
So he plays it for the next three sequels, which
so he's
is like
at that end.
He's the only guy that played the Wolfman. He played the son of Dracula. Mm-hmm. He played Frankenstein's monster in one of the movies, and the Mummy for three movies. So that's where it gets kind of fun. Is at least The Mummy's Tomb, then The Mummy's Ghost, then The Mummy's Curse. And the thing is, they're all kind of slogs. If I remember correctly, it was like every other one was pretty good, but they're all like an hour long. Like literally, they're no more than an hour and 5 minutes.
And
tops.
Yet they probably feel longer.
Yeah,
than
yeah, they're and that I, short.
They're really short. And somebody was telling me like, oh, how did you squeeze that many movies? I was like, it's no different than marathoning a show.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
I just felt like I watched a Mummy series all week.
Right.
The most fun one is the last one, which I'd never seen. Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, and. Really cool, not as great as Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. I think that movie's flawless. Yeah. It's one of my favorites of all time. They kind of recycle some of the jokes from that, and it works to the most part. But really, the last 10 minutes is like comedy gold, which is where there's the real mummy, there's a guy disguised as the mummy, there's another person that's dressed as a mummy. There's basically three mummies and Abbott and Costello in the middle of it running around this pyramid. And that stuff is really a lot of fun. So the original franchise... it's interesting, but it's funny that they haven't been able to capture what they did in that one since. Like the Brendan Fraser one is a complete 180.
It's a completely different movie. Like you can't even compare it to the original. I enjoyed that Brendan Fraser one a lot when it came out.
The first one was fun.
I haven't seen it. And I mean, Scorpion King was overly CG'd, but I mean, it did its thing. But I remember having a lot of fun seeing that one in the theater where it felt big and fun and almost kind of Disney-like, but it still had some scares to it.
I mean, I still haven't seen this new Mummy, but I'm curious because if Bill Condon's doing Bride,
yes,
which is a perfect fit,
yes,
if he's allowed to make his movie, but if he's trying to make it more action-y to fit in the other world, I don't see him making that movie.
Neither
you know,
do
I mean,
I.
Bride just feels like a smaller, intimate, dark movie.
I mean,
movie.
Well, we could hope.
Well, and to give you guys some backing, even though that Mummy is not doing very well here in the States, the exit polls on it have not been good. And with that, the financials have not been as strong as they were hoping for. It's doing really well overseas. So in that regard, it's still tracking pretty well.
It goes back to those flashbacks that I said.
Yeah, they're at 178 million worldwide.
I mean, he is a big draw. Tom Cruise is still a big draw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
he is here too, and it's interesting.
Well, it's worth mentioning. I wrote a piece on Blumhouse.com this week. Because I've been in Mummy mode, our friend Steven Scarlatta, who did Jodorowsky's Dune and is somewhat an expert in unmade movies, asked me, he's like, hey, did you ever read the script Mick Garris almost made? And I was like, no, I'd freaking love to read that. So I obtained it, and I read it. This is 95.
He was going to make a Mummy movie in the 90s?
Yeah, well, he wrote it three times. He wrote it in the very early 90s. He wrote it for Clive Barker to be Clive Barker's The Mummy. And that one was modern day. It took place in Beverly Hills.
There'd
had all
be
sorts
so
of
much weird
sadomasochistic
bandaging in that.
Go figure, that one didn't work
I would
out.
Watch that movie.
Yeah, I totally want that made now.
Yeah, and then after the Clive Barker one fell apart, George Romero was supposed to do it. And he wrote a draft, and they were ready to go. And according to Mick, because the one I read was Mick's rewrite of Romero's, and Mick was going to direct this one. And basically the way he explained it to me is like, because if you remember, Romero worked a lot in the 90s movies, but never got a, he didn't get any films made.
Yeah.
He was constantly trying, everything fell apart. Basically, he was going to do a Mummy, and then he got an offer to do another Living Dead movie, which he was like, I can't turn that down. I have to do my Living Dead movie. And as soon as he left the Mummy, the Living Dead movie fell apart.
Yeah.
And so he lost both gigs. But at that point, Mick was on it, and he was going to direct it in 95. And the script I read was fantastic. Huh. It, because it had both mummies in it. It had Omotep and Karis.
Huh.
And basically,
were they on the same side or did they battle?
No, same side. It was amazing. Basically, it opens the same, basically the same as all the other ones, where Omotep is trying to kill his lover to fulfill, you know, sacrifice her to fulfill this promise he made to some god or whatever. They catch him in the middle of it and sentence him to, you know, to die buried alive and be stricken from history. Like, they take his name off everything. And then it reawakens in the mid-90s, modern times, if you will. They find his tomb, this woman, Helen, who, of course, is a doppelganger for his long-lost love. Omotep comes back, so it's kind of the Boris Karloff version, mm-hmm. but him waking up in the 90s. And it's not funny. I mean, it was meant to be a straight movie, but there's some fun stuff like him walking through Los Angeles for the first time, and there's a sequence where he goes into a 7-Eleven and sees, like, Trojan condoms, and he's like, huh, you know, like, that sort of thing. And then in order to – he needs these relics. He needs to reobtain these relics that went missing in transit to – complete the sacrifice, so he resurrects Karis, the mummy. So it's kind of like, whoa, that's like everything from the original franchise in one movie and modernized.
Sounds fun.
So it was terrific, and Mick was kind enough to do an interview with me for it, because I was like, I gotta ask you about this script that you wrote.
That's great.
And even he said he hadn't read it in 20 years and was shocked that I found it. But
yeah, I mean, even those just modernizations of all those characters would be enough for me to want to watch
sure.
a new universe, just like putting them in modern day Creature yeah. Black Lagoon, just they find him now.
Yep.
What would happen?
Yep.
It's like, and actually when we were talking about which one to start with, Creature actually might be
that
the
been.
Most obvious, because it hasn't been done again and yep. and everyone's been waiting.
And so. I think that's I have never seen a mummy movie that I found scary. I think that might be one of the issues. Is
he's
like,
not scary.
He's just not scary.
Yeah.
Moving slow.
He's lumbering.
Tough.
He's dusty. You feel like you could breathe on him and he would
Hammer
fall over.
Hammer did a couple decent mummy versions.
Yeah,
they were a little creepier.
I have to watch those. There's one with Christopher Lee, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen. There's four Hammer ones.
I think Peter Boyle maybe plays it once around. I know he does a Frankenstein too. Yeah, I can't remember. But I remember one of them being like actually pretty effective. And
yeah.
A little, but yeah, it is. It's hard to make slow moving. I mean, just like kind of zombies at a certain point maybe lost a step and then 28 days later happened.
Well,
so it's like, how do you reinvent?
Zombies worked as a horde. One zombie by himself is not scary, but
right.
you know, 200 slow-moving lumbering things, you pretty much end up with like Assault on Precinct
13.
An army of mummies might have scared me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but having one that's like a total badass that you use to do your bidding, like your creature that you take off the leash,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a cool idea. And that's the one that's in the, you know, Garris's, and it's the one that you know from the old movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, it never happened. And, you know, I mean, my favorite mummy thing is thanks to you, Elric. You introduced me to that amazing story.
Which
episode,
we could talk about today.
Mummy Daddy.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
we will. That will come up later.
That's a good one.
There's
another mummy movie that I remember, and I swear it had the girl from Who's the Boss, and I swear she
is
got
Is it the
naked.
Russell Mulcahy did some sort of mummy thing? Oh, The Eternal.
The Eternal.
The film by Michael Almerida, the guy who made Nausea, made a mummy film.
Okay.
Called The Eternal, and it's like in Ireland or somewhere. And I think Christopher Walken's in it.
I think I've seen that. That's like the most recent mummy thing
I think
The Eternal.
I think The Eternal is like a
Why
version
of a
mummy.
Why did I think that it had the girl from
she
Who's
might be.
The Boss
no,
in
she,
it?
She
no,
might be
I think
is
I'm,
that Michael Almerida?
I think I'm confusing movies, but I did see The Eternal recently.
Yeah. 98?
Yeah. Yeah.
Christopher Walken and Alyssa Milano?
Oh, it does.
Yeah,
Alyssa Milano's in there. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, that one's kind of arty and interesting. I can't remember it too well.
I don't remember loving it or hating it.
Yeah.
I just remember it being a mummy movie and me being like, huh, you don't
Actually,
see mummy movies that
is,
often.
It is not Alyssa Milano, but she looks exactly like her on
okay,
the cover, right?
There you go.
There you go.
Close but enough. It is Christopher Walken.
Cool.
That's so. Yeah, that's interesting. I this is where I'd love to be like on the inner sanctum of like, you know, that the people putting Universal to know how that box office translates to, okay, so what should we do next? Do they pivot or do they stay course with the next ones? Because I really want them to, you know, you really want them to go, let's make it truer to the thing, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, again, Bride is going to be the test. Look, it's possible to course correct.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going for it.
I mean, like, Bill Condon makes classy looking, Gods and Monsters is a classy movie, Dreamgirls. I mean, he knows how to direct.
He did Twilight movies too, right?
He did, but
did
I mean, toward, yeah, at the end, but they were, you know, looking for someone who could deliver. You can never really judge someone too much on those kind of frames. franchise ones, but he also did Candyman too. You know, that was his, one of his first. I mean, but you especially look at Gods and Monsters, and it's such a and this is a film about James Whale, the director of Bride of Frankenstein. So no one knows the material better than Bill Condon will know this material. So to me, you know, casting her will be somebody put a really, I think on their Shockwaves group, they said the girl who from the actress from Christine, Rebecca. I can't remember her last name.
Rebecca Hall.
She would be
that would
perfect.
Be perfect. Oh, yeah.
It's such a great call. But you know, like, I know Angelina Jolie was the one being, the people were claiming. And that just
really
is like, again, yeah,
it's obvious.
Like, it's like, sure, she could do it, but I don't care.
Overseas, guys. It's all about the overseas.
No, totally.
I guess that's what it is, because somebody was saying, I read another big article on it, like, why Tom Cruise? Why are you spending money on him and Johnny Depp and, you know, Javier Bardem and maybe Angelina Jolie? It's the characters, not the name. And it's true. Like, Marvel has proved that. This is what this whole article was saying. I can't remember. It's probably Birth, Movies, Death. But it's like, it doesn't matter who is at the helm. It's the characters that sell the thing. So just stay true to the characters. And that's all I could hope for. Because, look, I want monster movies. I'm against it. But, you know, if everyone was just passing on the new Mummy and being like, no, that's good enough. No, it's not good enough.
Yeah,
it is not. Those are not the monsters I grew up. It's not even the Brendan Fraser movies I saw as a, you know, a early young man.
And from the quick scans that I just did when I was checking out the financials, the exit polls have not been good, and not even just from like diehard horror fans who are like, you know, bastardized
like
the Mummy franchise. That's people who just, you know, would go see a Tom Cruise movie are like, it's just missing something. So it seems like it's been polarizing, because I did read some critical reviews that were like, it's not bad. It's fun, but
yeah, once we get to it's not bad, you know, like, there's too many other options
it
out there.
Make me angry.
Of what to watch.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, again, my point is, like, if this is the universe you have to play with. You have the Universal Monster movies. These are the most famous, instantly recognizable monsters in cinematic history. And you choose to literally lift five other B horror movies, you know, like Life Force, American Werewolf in London. Somebody said Quatermass. I didn't pick that up.
Oh my
initially.
God. Now I have to see it. No one references Quatermass.
Somebody, I think it was on RogerEbert.com, whoever did that review, literally name checks six movies that it rips off.
Wow.
And it's like, why? And as soon as I read them, I'm like, yep. And it's like, you know, people are like, oh, but it's fun. And it's like, no. We can't give that an excuse. You this is the fucking Mummy, for Christ's sake.
It's not student bodies.
Yeah.
You're not making student bodies. You don't have to make a quick joke.
Don't shit on student bodies, Elric.
I won't.
Yeah, that one you could rip off, I guess. What else we got? Anything else?
No,
I have already purchased my tickets, and I'm seeing 47 Meters Down at midnight tomorrow night.
Ooh.
Yeah.
After trivia?
After trivia.
Hardcore,
girl.
She's on vacation this week, technically.
I'm here. I've did four fucking meetings today, and it's my vacation week. So,
unbelievable.
Yeah, so much for my vacation.
Well, three meetings, and we had a meeting. We don't count as a meeting.
No, you guys do.
We got together.
I had to be here. It's a meeting on my vacation. I'm wearing pantyhose, guys, it's my vacation.
We're plotting the next 100 episodes of Shockwave.
Yes.
Well, I guess we should brace you now, and we'll talk about it online
summertime.
As well. It is summertime, and because of the hectic schedules ahead, both for all four of us, really.
Yeah, we've got a couple of film festivals coming up and a few conventions.
Summer travel plans.
Summer travel.
So we're breaking. Don't freak out.
We'll be back, and we have some bonus episodes coming up too.
Yeah, so there'll be 3 weeks where we won't have a regular episode, but there will be fillers in there, and the rest of us will keep talking to you on social media.
Like, yes. In other words, this is the last episode for a while.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Until second week of July, but there will be some bonus episodes in the meantime.
Yes, we are plotting. We are plotting things in advance for the next couple of weeks until we return in July, and then I think we might have a minor break there too. And then,
Week for Fantasia,
we'll do something.
Yeah, we're going to
come back. Oh, yeah, you guys were
going to
take that week.
Anyways, we will let you know, but don't freak out.
And we have something amazing planned for August. I'm really excited about
August
it.
Is going to be fucking badass.
Yeah.
But in the great words of Scream, we'll be right back.
Trailer for It is terrifying and has already been viewed over 29 million times. It's pretty clear that everyone is excited for the film, and so is Factory Entertainment, who have just announced their latest collectible, a highly detailed statue of Pennywise from the classic movie.
Tim Curry's likeness of the sewer-dwelling clown is hauntingly immortalized in this 15-inch-tall recreation of the character, as seen in the popular roadside scene where he waves while holding floating balloons. Best of all, the statue features audio of your favorite lines from the film.
It's available to order now at www.factoryent.com.
And if you enter coupon code Blumhouse during checkout, you'll save 10% on this or any other horror-related collectible, including their Nightmare on Elm Street Freddy statue.
Ooh, they have a wide range of products you're sure to love, from properties like Game of Thrones, Back to the Future, Friday 13th, and more, including their just-announced San Diego Comic-Con exclusives.
Again, www.factoryent.com, coupon code Blumhouse during checkout to save 10% on their horror-related collectibles.
Welcome back to Shockwaves. We are here with Dez Dolly, co-creator of the new show on Hulu, Dimension 404.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Yes.
We've been wanting to talk to you for a long time because...
That's crazy. Stop. You don't have to lie to me.
We totally... No, we watched the show a couple of weeks ago because everybody on the Blumhouse website was freaking out over the Patton Oswalt episode. And they were like, you have to go watch this episode. Uh-huh. So we did. And then I got hooked and I binge watched like as many episodes as I could back to back. And then Rob just did as well.
Yes, I was going to say, but she's getting ahead of herself and saying like, we all wanted you, you know.
No,
like,
no.
The thing that
Ryan and I were big on it.
You guys have already given me LaCroix. You don't have to flatter me. It's fine.
Her and Ryan were big on it, and I heard about the show, obviously, through our website. I just marathoned it, like, last week leading up to this episode. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, I was telling them, it's like, because I forget that I have Hulu, like, because we have...
Okay.
Because you have, like, Amazon Prime and Shudder and Netflix, and mm-hmm. you have so many options to watch stuff that I actually constantly forget that there is a Hulu app on there, and they have original content. And
sure.
finally, I'm like, oh, Hulu, okay, here, I'm going to watch the show finally. And I went and watched... I watched all six pretty much back-to-back, which says that I loved it.
Because hey.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It was really great. I mean, in general, I love anthology... storytelling, whether it's films or television. And the thing about your show was it hits that sweet spot where it could be Black Mirror-ish, but it's definitely not as dark and fucked up. It's more like Black Mirror meets like Amazing Stories.
Sure. Yeah.
Kind of more in that realm where
it's exactly.
fun and, you know, asks these different types of questions and puts you in these different positions. But there is a slight sinister thing under the surface.
There's some cynicism there for sure, but I personally need the catharsis. So I think my partners and I know that some of these other shows like Black Mirror can be a little they're a little heavy.
I can watch one episode of that.
At a time, right?
And then I'm done.
You need a break. Exactly. No. So we wanted to be the antidote to that. A little catharsis for folks.
But they're all completely different. They all come from completely different timelines, walks mm-hmm. of life, and they're different tones. But the only kind of connecting tissue is technology. And even that is a little...
Yeah, it's a pretty tenuous thread, yes.
Yeah.
But that's it. Yeah, sure. No, we wanted to... It's not so much technology as it is just our modern world, you know?
Right.
And we always... Oh, God, we hated comparing ourselves to the Twilight Zone. We never wanted to mention anything else, any other show in your elevator pitch, of course. You want to stand alone. But it's tough to get away from a show like that. It's just the high watermark in anthology TV. And we are always fascinated with the way that, you know, Twilight Zone dealt with fears of the nuclear era. So it was, I guess, not so much technology as it is just our relationship to the current world, you know, how we communicate with one another and deal with the madness that it is around us.
Well, how did the show come about? Sorry, Rob.
Yeah, no, tell us about the we. Who are the other co-creators and how did you guys come
sure. together? Sure. So the real short version is... I had a few friends from USC Film School. You know, we had worked together crewing on projects and stuff back in the day. Will Campos, David Welch, and Dan Johnson. And while I was producing and editing our first web series, Video Game High School, these guys came to us with a couple of short scripts. They were 10, 12 pages long. And they said, why don't we do a follow-up web series, you know, modern day Amazing Stories, if you will. And I said, yeah, that sounds great. Creepshow is my favorite movie as a kid. I want to do anthology. We can get a bunch of our filmmaker friends from USC together, and it'll be the perfect experiment. You know, and much to the studio's credit, they said, no, don't sell yourself short. There's a TV show here. And then the business gets involved, and they say, well, it's not a half-hour TV show. You've got an hour-long TV show. And we go, oh, we do? Okay.
Wow.
Let's start rewriting things. So that's the really condensed version. It was in the it was in the oven for about 3 years as we were developing and realizing, just trying to figure out the format, you know, trying to break down the wraparound segment, pitting the half hour versus hour long format against one another, trying to find that tone. You know, it really came down to writing 60 short stories. And
you wrote 60 and then picked six?
By writing, I mean we got as far as log lines on many of them.
Oh, okay. Right.
Okay. You know, here's the sci-fi hook. This is the story. This is the main character and their arc. And we take it about that far. And yeah, we probably came up with 60 is probably an exaggeration, but somewhere in the 30 to 50 mark. I mean, our Google Doc is hundreds of pages. And we kind of put them all up on the wall and said, where's an anthology show here? You know, how do we connect these dots and we can thread these together and find that through line, you know?
That's great.
I have to say, well, I want to talk specifics because we're going to get into the whole TV anthology thing. But because the show is fresh in my mind, I wanted to talk specifics about it. I don't know if this is just coincidence, but I was literally talking to a friend about how evil online dating is, or at least, you know, my experiences in the way past. And you know, it's just like it's a nightmare. And then the first episode I watch is Matchmaker. And I kind of like stopped like, wait a minute, are they listening? Are they paying attention? Because that one is all about kind of the online dating experience. You know, that one, and obviously there's one with Patton Oswalt, which is kind of him rebelling against his niece wanting to see like a 3D movie and instead suggesting we should go, look, Reanimator's playing Suspiria, like naming all the great, like, of course, we are like, yes, let's go to those. And it's like, no.
That's easily my favorite of the ones I've seen.
Yeah,
it's the only one I've seen.
It's the only one he's seen.
Do you identify with that?
Well, I actually do feel like you lifted something from our show. When he definitely felt familiar character. Well, very much a New Bev regular, I think.
Yes, and I guess my question is: so how much you know, fact inspired the fiction between you and the other co-creators?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of me and Dusty and vice versa. You know, I feel like that film versus digital debate is something that I would even have with some of my younger writing partners. One of my producing partners, Freddie Wong, is sort of known to be a VFX wunderkind, if you will. And we would always have those debates. You know, he would talk about how great CG is, and I would talk about some of the best ILM moments, you know, amazing feats they'd pull off in their creature shop, you know, or talk about guys like Rob Bottin or Steve Johnson or whatever. And they'd be like, yeah, that was cool, but it doesn't, you know. So I don't know. We just wanted to explore that divide. That's something that I felt is universal. Even now, I feel like I'm the old guy in the writer's room. I don't understand how to use social media or any of that stuff. You know, I got to learn that from my producing partners. So we just wanted to tap into the things that people are dealing with on an everyday basis, you know?
But at the same time, it feels really contemporary. Whereas that particular episode, I was like, oh, they get me. The next one, my husband had been telling me about gaming tournaments and how people are professional gamers and they get paid hundreds of thousands of years in sponsorship to just do these professional gaming tournaments. And then like Rob just mentioned, where it was like almost kismet that night, we turn on that episode and I was so like, I was like, this is a thing.
I know, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
They're on ESPN now.
Yeah, that's what he was telling me. He watches, I don't even know what it's called, this thing on YouTube where you watch other people play games.
Yeah, Let's Plays.
Okay. And so I never understand it. I'm always like, you're watching someone else sit there and play a video game. Just play the video game.
I have to admit, I don't either.
I really don't.
Then you remember while watching people lift weights back in the day? I remember on the world wide of sports or whatever, and you just see some big guy and he'd pick something up and put it down. You're like, whoa, that was cool.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, my brother
used to love watching that.
Yeah, we used to watch those lumberjack championships. Yeah, I guess it's sort of the same thing.
But yeah, so I was not even aware of that world until like right before seeing that and then seeing the episode, it felt so topical and so aware of everything that's going on in that world.
Well, obviously that was a goal of ours. Knowing we're going to attempt anthology, we had to bring something fresh to avoid all the comparisons to all the greats that came before us, you know. So it really just came down to being honest about exploring, you know, modern culture.
But that said, it feels like you do give a kind of knowing and very loving wink at like Outer Limits and Twilight Zone.
I'm nostalgic for that stuff. Yeah. Absolutely. I grew up on that. I'm a geek for that stuff. So as much as we tried to consciously veer away from it, it was in our bones. So I think that's what you're picking up on.
Speaking of being geeky, I watched Polybius. The is that how you
Polybius.
Say it?
Polybius.
We made the joke in the episode that the kids don't know how to say it because we don't either.
Yeah, it's the haunted video game. But what was fun for me, where you hit my soft spots, is that both Adrien Barbeau and Ken Foray are in that episode.
Yes.
So across the board, I mean, the casting is like totally like the sort of people that we get excited popping up, and I'm just curious how much control you guys had over that, getting people like Adrien Barbeau and Ken Foray.
I can say that very luckily so, we had a lot of control over casting.
That's cool.
It has a lot to do with the fact that it was a super cheap show, you know, and giving credit to Hulu, they're a fantastic partner. We had an excellent casting director who would actually throw those names out. She just kind of got the vibe of the show when we originally pitched it to her, and she would say, yeah, let's go get Adrien Barbeau. How cool is that? I'm like, yeah, oh my God. Yeah. Yes. I didn't even think I could get that. You know, the studio would say, why don't we go after Mark Hamill? I go, no, we're not going to get Mark Hamill. Why would we do that? And they go, you don't know until you ask, you know? So I don't know. We just got really lucky. People really responded to the material. I never thought in a million years we'd have people like Adrien Barbeau and Ken Foray in the same cast in an episode. She's got the same name. Mm-hmm. She changed her name, so she's got the same name as her segment in Creepshow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just another little nod, little Easter egg.
I didn't pick that up.
Yeah. I cried during the Constance Wu episode.
Oh, yeah, I was about to bring that up. I was telling Elric about it on the way in. There's an episode called Bob, which stars Constance Wu, and basically it takes place over the Christmas holiday, and it's, you know, they bring – Constance is a – therapist for soldiers.
She's like a psychologist.
Army psychologist, and they bring her in because they have a very unique case, the government, and it's basically this giant like meat thing with an eyeball that looks like hell. But what really got me is it's voiced by Tom Noonan, and I didn't even realize that right away.
Yeah, well, that's good.
You know, and then I just saw his name in the credits. Like, oh my God, it's Tom Noonan's voice. But it's amazing how, you know, what seems like a kind of outlandish and somewhat funny idea. Like Becca said, by the end of it, I got so emotional, and basically I was telling Elric, I was like, only Tom Noonan's voice can make me almost cry.
Yeah.
Being just a giant piece of meat with an eye.
No, he's great.
And I was watching it with my husband, and he looked at me and he goes, are you crying over this? And I was like, this is really sweet.
That's awesome.
But I have to say, I was scared because I have a film coming out this fall, which is a Christmas horror film and stars Constance Wu. And so when I saw her name pop up, I was like,
uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Did someone steal the
thunder? It's nothing like it. It's nothing like it. No giant meat named Bob. But I cried at the end. It was very
sweet.
Well,
that's nice to hear. That's all that credit has to go to my brilliant writing partner, Will Campos. That was his concept. He just walked in one day and pitched that. And
literally giant meat with eyeball.
Yeah, and it's got to be a Christmas story, and this is the arc. And I feel like my only superpower, my real superpower in the writer's room, is to know when something's so crazy that you have to pursue it. But that was one of those ideas where all the other writers went, no, that's stupid. That's insane. There's no way we'd be able to do that. And I said, that's exactly why we have to. And those are the kinds of episodes we should be, you know, striving to.
Well, because then they become, you know, that's what stands out. It's a unique story you never would have thought of. Like, who would have thought that could be the most emotional episode? Mm-hmm. Because of we've never seen it before.
But
we've never seen that story told before.
Yeah, like I've never seen that story, but I feel like I've seen it in certain aspects where like Howl or War Games. I mean, like it felt like something that I'd seen before, but I'd never seen it before. So yeah, it seemed familiar.
Those movies don't have Tom Noonan voicing you.
It's not a giant chunk of meat. So and there's no Noonan.
And before we tackle our topic, I also have to mention the Cronus episode, which is the third episode. My buddy Steve Sipelis, who listens, I hope I'm calling you out. This was written for you because I know how much you love sitcoms and old cartoons and stuff like that. It was basically like your like Back to the Future / kind of Doctor Who-ish sort of. What did the other like? There's one cartoon it reminded me of that I grew up as a kid, which I can't remember. Where basically it was like interactive, like you had the plane and the action figure, and you had to shoot at the TV during the show. I don't know.
It was a VHS tape.
Yeah, right?
Had that.
I can't remember the name of it for the life of me.
Neither can I. It'll come to me later.
But it reminded me of that, where basically this girl is obsessed with this TV show that she grew up with as a little kid, and it's kind of informed all her knowledge of science or interest in science as this science fiction show. And then the characters from the actual show up from the future because the timeline has been disrupted Basically because she needs to write her report, which she hasn't done yet. It's
and if she doesn't write a report, she doesn't become a scientist and like save the world. So they all show up to like force her to write the report.
And, basically.
Yeah, basically.
I think we're doing a terrible job of doing a synopsis, but...
No, it's great.
Don't have us...
No, with that episode, we thought, I don't know, this is just sort of our sick sensibility. We thought, how do we troll the audience and what's the most lame climax ever? And it's an action sequence with a girl writing an essay, you know? But then, okay, now let's actually execute that and make it fun and entertaining, you know? So that's sort of where our headspace was.
It worked. It somehow really worked.
Oh, you guys are too flattering. Thank you.
I'm a sucker for time travel stuff. And it's like they keep going back to the same scene from like different angles. And so they're all in it. And it's just a lot of fun.
So how do suckers like me who don't have Hulu watch this? Is it going to be impossible for – or do Hulu – I know Netflix doesn't often put out discs of their stuff. Do you think there's ever a chance of a disc release?
I think with physical media, it just comes down to demand.
Right.
And I don't even know what the metrics are for stuff like that anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I imagine it's unlikely because they want to push people to their streaming service.
Exactly. I know Hulu has the first window right now. It is available on iTunes in Canada. I don't know when they're dropping in the U.S.
Okay.
I'll be happy to let you guys know when I do. But
yeah.
I'm just the show creative. They don't. That's above my pay grade. I don't get this information.
I just have to break into one of their accounts to watch the rest.
Sure,
I'll give you my passcode.
That's how I watched the first one.
Yeah, sure.
Well, how satisfied has Hulu been with the response thus far?
They love it. Hulu said they've made $1 trillion. It's the best show with the most viewers ever. No, I don't know. That's another one of those.
It's
interesting.
It's like on par with Handmaid's Tale.
It's beyond Handmaid's Tale, but they don't say that because they're embarrassed.
Okay.
No, what I mean, like TV versus like network TV versus the digital world. I'm just curious if you can track and actually get the statistics the same way you would over like, oh, X amount of people watch this song.
You can, and it's
I'm sure.
And it's incredibly specific as opposed to Nielsen ratings, which is just, you know, the sort of median aggregate estimate. They have those numbers.
Yeah.
They keep them proprietary though. And I think, you know, the cynic in me thinks that that's a way so they can manipulate advertising revenue and such and such. But I hope to get a whisper of how well it's doing.
Well, we hope that they have really enjoyed it because we'd love to see some more from it.
Well, absolutely. I think if, you know, the second Blumhouse writes some glowing review on the site, Hulu will order up four more seasons.
I'll keep that in mind.
All right. It's coming.
As long as there's a podcast episode. We just want an episode about the future podcast.
That's pretty great.
That's great. There's your pitch.
I don't think I've seen podcast. I guess the Pontypool's the closest horror that would feel like, you know, because
it's
a radio station.
And even that's like talk radio.
Yeah, it's really talk radio, but it almost feels like in that world.
You know, in
but.
General, radio is not the most exciting, unless you're like Eric Bogosian. I don't know.
Does Tusk count?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
it has got a podcasting character.
Yeah. Well, whatever. We're available for cameos. Just so you know, if there's a season
all right.
and there's a podcast episode, we're
right,
willing.
Deal.
Thank you.
We're in.
So basically, I mean, you know, Becca came very prepared for this, whereas, as usual, Ulrich and I did not. I wrote some of my favorite episodes from some of the bigger shows, which I know Becca's not going to go for.
Nope, I went niche.
But let's hear from you first. What are some of the... You brought notes. What are some of the pivotal anthology shows? Because you said Creepshow is your favorite movie. So we know film-wise, that's
Creepshow is my favorite anthology movie.
Anthology.
Just to clarify, definitely not my favorite movie, but Creepshow and then the Raft segment from Creepshow 2 is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty great.
Yeah, watched those ad nauseum when I was a kid. But I grew up on Twilight Zone and Outer Limits. Mm-hmm. You know, my father had bootleg VHS cassettes, and so he would just take me through all the classics. You know, and I had TV Land on cable, so you can get a lot of the stuff that way. I'm trying to think what else. I remember Tales from the Dark Side would come on at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I can't remember what network it was, maybe TBS or USA. And then just that theme music would kick in and freak me the hell out. So I watched a lot of that. Doctor Who when I was a kid.
Were you of the Tales from the Crypt generation when that was on HBO?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm born in 82, but I was very much a 90s kid, so I watched a lot of Tales from the Crypt.
handful of Alfred Hitchcock Presents reruns. What else in the 90s? I didn't get into Monsters so much.
Since you're just a couple of years younger now, I grew up with Are You Afraid of the Dark? Like, it was my favorite thing in the world.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then Goosebumps was a little bit like, I probably shouldn't have been watching it by that point, because I think that was when I was like in high school, Goosebumps was running. It felt a little young for me, but I still watched it.
Felt a little
episode.
Young, and I don't think it translated well to TV. Mm-hmm. It was a little too cheap. I preferred the books. I got in trouble for writing way too many book reports on R.L. Stein. Yeah, the teachers had to shut it down.
No. See, those were two that I was too old for. Like, I missed those. And I'm bummed because I see articles pop up about them. Mm-hmm. Although I love the Goosebumps movie. I thought that was a lot of fun for what
Man,
it was.
Man, Are You Afraid of the Dark hit me at like a sweet time. Like, that's exactly what I needed then.
It had a great tone. And I don't know, maybe later we can talk about your guys' favorite like wraparound segments and intros and stuff, but that's definitely one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It just strikes a chord. There's very few anthology shows that have that creepy an intro, and then there's something so iconic about the kids around the fire and, you know, submitted for your approval.
The
and
Midnight the, Society.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's rad. That's
I like the
show.
Music of Friday 13th, the series. That and the little, all the shots of dolls and
that's
stuff.
That's technically an anthology show, is it? It's standalone.
I will let it. I will
that
let
story
it
never carries on. That story is like the pilot and then like maybe one episode in the middle and then the ending. The rest of it is like so.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'll call it, it's procedural. Like it was very.
In the same breath, can we say that X-Files is technically anthology?
Only if they were doing the Monster of the Week.
Right.
I think, yes.
But all of Friday 13th was Monster of the Week.
Didn't it?
Always.
Yeah, Friday the 13th never
Friday the 13th
had anything
was always
but
that storyline, basically. Occasionally, they'd bring in the guy that they were trying to track down the objects for, but that was like a throwaway.
Now, I haven't seen this one in like since it aired, but the Freddy TV show was actually an anthology show, right?
Yeah.
Like Freddy doing intros.
Oh, they were totally
Freddy's
random,
Nightmares were
an
anthology,
I wrote one of those down. Oh, the Bill Malone. Bill Malone actually did some good one. Lucky Stuff, the person, like the wife realizes her dead husband won the lottery, and she has to like somehow get the ticket back from him. By digging up the body and stuff.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
I remember that being
actually pretty clever. Because some of them were like, we'll have clever parts, but just you could tell how cheap they were.
They're really cheap.
Yeah, that show's cheap.
Is that even available? Like, I see bootlegs of it at convention.
I have the illegal copies.
It's a weird thing because I bought, I think they only released 4 episodes on VHS, including the pilot. The pilot's great.
No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Because it's a
directed
prequel.
Directed by Tobe Hooper, prequel, and it's totally Freddy's
written by Craven.
Before. Written by, So that one's pretty cool. And then after that, for the most part, my vague memory is that Freddy was just kind of the Crypt Keeper. He was kind of in between the segments, and there were things like Lucky Stiff. But then as the show progressed, they started like giving you a couple episodes here and there where he was a main part of it. Those are always my favorites. When I was like, oh, all right, Freddy's going to be a part of this one. Now I like this episode again.
There's one towards the end where a girl's like obsessed by Freddy. I think it's the one that your buddy David
Scow
wrote. And it's like there's a goth girl and a guy's trying to impress her, but she's in love with Freddy.
Yeah, which apparently is the most heavily edited episode of Freddy's Nightmares. Yeah, yeah. And then so those VHS came out, but that was it, those 4 episodes. And if I'm not mistaken, the Nightmare on Elm Street box set on Blu-ray I think has 2 episodes, 2 random ones.
So
I don't know why they've never released it, because I feel like as poor quality as those shows are, or as not as good as you remember, like I'd totally buy Freddy's Nightmares.
I would totally watch all of them. Yeah.
I would. You know, it'd be cool. This is how I would do it. I would release a box set of all the Freddy movies, and on each Freddy movie, you got like 3 or 4 episodes, and that way you have to get the whole box to get all the movies. Hope someone's listening. I like your shirt. You're wearing
a
Freddy shirt.
Wearing a
Freddy
shirt.
Friday 3
shirt. Yeah.
Do you remember? Because I feel like there's some that. Especially like this is a hard topic. I had to like go back and then go, oh, I can't ever remember names of episodes, but I can remember the ones that creeped me out. So I was lucky I could at least remember one, because when you said Tales from Dark Side, of all the ones, that one that all kind of blends together, but there was one that I remembered. And when you said Creepshow, it's because of the Creepshow connection, because Tom Savini directed it and the creature looked like Fluffy.
Halloween Candy.
Yes, Halloween Candy.
Yes.
Wow.
And that is the one that I remember best, because it also felt like the precursor to Trick or Treat, the story where
it's
almost the same story.
It's the same story. Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, so it's just this old guy who's like really mean-spirited, and he doesn't want to do Halloween at all. His son convinces him, who's going out, you have to do it. So he starts doing bad things to the kid's candy. I think he puts like soap on it or something.
Yeah, he dumps a bunch of he's like bathroom garbage into their candy bags.
He's a real prick. And then basically all the kids come and have their silly little experiences with him. And at the end of the night, something that literally looks like Fluffy, but on a small, like a troll, comes to the door and then starts menacing him. And it actually gets pretty creepy.
I remember, if I remember correctly, he said trick or treat and he wanted candy.
Yeah.
And it all starts because the old man, you know, he's a curmudgeon. And he just goes, no, I've had enough with you rotten kids for the night. And he slams the door in the troll's face. And then the troll menaces him.
Yeah,
and it's great.
And then, and the only reason I'm bringing that back, because I felt like a lot of those, I've been meaning to actually dip back in. Mm-hmm. But I did notice, Shudder, I think, has the entire first season for sure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I'm actually kind of excited but obviously with these ones, they'll be
they have
this,
all four seasons, actually.
But it's always good to have like one or two to tell people to start with. That way you're not put off if the first one's a bad one.
Right. Yeah.
But that one I definitely remember. I just remember the creature. So when I looked up, I was like, oh, it's all kind of coming back.
No, the creature's great. I remember there was actually a chapter in my old Tom Savini Grand Illusions 2 book where he breaks down the creation of that creature for that episode. I think I wrote that in my notes here. Or maybe I didn't. I can't remember who wrote that.
I think it was the individual
who went on to write Brain Dead wrote that episode.
Brain Dead, the New Zealand film? Oh, the Adam Simon film.
That's Come dead on. Alive here.
Yes.
Americans.
Kiwi out of here.
Unbelievable. It's funny. Tales from the Dark Side is one that eluded me. I never got to see the show. I loved the movie.
So did I.
I remember when the movie came out, and technically it's sort of Creepshow 3.
Yeah.
Sort of. Like, I freaking love the movie.
Some interesting people worked on it. If you scroll down the credits, it seems like it's lower budget for sure, because some of them will be super, like even that one's super minimal. It's like one location, one space. But a lot of Savini I noticed on those credits.
My favorite episode of that series is called Sorry, Right Number, and it's written by Stephen King. It's the only entry in those first four seasons that he wrote.
Do you know which season it is?
It's season 4.
Oh, cool. I definitely want to watch that.
And it's the one episode that comes closest to the Twilight Zone vibe. Mm-hmm. And it's this it starts with a small family, husband, wife, and their young daughter, and she receives a distressing but unintelligible phone call. Someone on the other line is screaming and crying, yelling, please take, please. And then the line goes dead. And she's calling her mother and friends and neighbors trying to figure out
time of caller ID.
Exactly. her and her husband decide it was either a prank call or it was a misdial. There's nothing they can do about it. And then later that night, he has a sudden heart attack and he dies on the living room floor. The very short version is it skips ahead to 5 years later, and she's in his study and she's watching one of the books that he wrote that was turned into a film, and they actually show footage from Dawn of the Dead, the original, as like this character's work. And it makes her tear up thinking about her husband, and she gets nostalgic. And so she calls her old home just to see who's there. And she gets herself from 5 years earlier.
Oh.
And she freaks out, realizing I have an opportunity to save my husband if I can just tell her to take him to the hospital. But she breaks down and can only squeeze out, please take, please, before the line goes dead.
Wow.
And that's the end of the episode. No, really well done. Very Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
That's super cool. Yeah, now that I know they're on Shudder, I'm going to have to check out
I'll have to look up online for any guides that, like, these are the best ones because
I love those, actually.
Especially when you're jumping back into something old that you might have to wade through a lot of, rough entries.
Yeah.
Since Tales from the Crypt was obviously the big one for everybody, what are some of your favorite Tales from the Crypt episodes?
Yeah, I wrote down a handful just because I can't remember how long ago it was. I mean, I have such fond memories of them when they originally aired on HBO, but I was really too young to fully understand them. It was a couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago, where I bought all 7 seasons, and I literally, it took me a few months, but I went through every single episode in order.
Hardcore. Nice.
And in fact, I never liked the final season 7, which is all like the UK edition as a kid. But when I revisited it, I actually appreciated them so much more. And like every episode was like, you know, like Ewan McGregor and Clive Owen, like all these like super famous people. And I was like, oh, all right, that's kind of cool. But anyway, I jotted down a couple of quick ones. the Walter Hill episode called Cutting Cards.
That's my, that's my number one.
Is it really?
Lance Henriksen.
It's got Lance Henriksen. Yeah. It's the so funniest, great. Too.
It is the Lance Henriksen is off the rails in that episode. That Russian roulette scene in the parking lot.
It's a brilliant,
awesome. That whole episode, it's like Hitchcockian levels of dread for me. I love that one.
But and Walter Hill's so tight. Like, the direction's so tight on that. It's great.
So if you're going to start Tales from the Crypt, start with Cutting Cards.
That's a great one. Well, actually, you know what? There's the first, I didn't write these down, but in the first season, there's a handful. There's the one with I should have brought it up. The one with Joe Pantaleone. That's, I think it's like the third episode.
The third episode, something that man's cat or something.
Tales from the Crypt. Let me look it up.
Wow.
But in the meantime, another one I really love that always stuck out to me was called What's Cookin', and it's the one with Judd Nelson and Christopher Reeve.
I don't remember.
I don't remember that one.
Christopher Reeve owned. It was directed by Gilbert Adler, but basically, I don't think it was around season four or so. But Christopher Reeve owned this diner that was kind of just doing all right. And he hired, you know, Judd Nelson, who's kind of like this creepy, he's like straight off of Relentless, character.
Yeah.
He like kind of works there, and basically Judd Nelson comes up with this amazing steak meat concoction that makes the diner like a huge hit. And then Christopher Reeve walks in on him in the back, and basically it's human meat. That's he's killing people and chopping up their fat and using it and serving people human flesh. I just remember it because it's like, because Christopher Reeve plays it kind of goofy.
Uh-huh.
So my memory is he walks in and he sees the body hanging, and he's like, and Judd Nelson is like cutting a piece off its ass. And it's like Christopher Reeve's like, oh my God, that's Mr. Hibbert or whatever it is. Yeah. His reaction is just hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, so that was a really, really good one.
We're in full Dougie mode on Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Yeah. If anyone's watching Twin Peaks, they're in full Dougie mode. So I couldn't get enough Dougie. So I had to write down Carrion Death with Kyle MacLachlan.
That's
which is one of the ones I always love because it's like classic, like man alone in a desert. He's attached to the cop who was trying to take him down, who's now dead. And he has to drag him through the desert and then vultures. And it's like, I love that simple elemental. It's you versus vultures. Mm-hmm. I thought that's always a really effective one.
The ones that, well, this one I remember watching as a kid and just not seeing it coming and then just being like, oh, it's called Beauty Rest. And it's about a small time beauty competition and these two women competing against each other.
Bill Malone?
I don't remember.
I remember Bill Malone doing a scary one.
I just remember that the big twist at the end was at the end, she ends up killing one of the contestants, kills the other one to guarantee that she will win. Mm. And then at the end, you find out that what there actually is it's Miss Autopsy. They cut her open and display her organs. Yeah. And I remember sitting on my bed in my room and being like 12 and just being like, oh my God. Like I did not see that coming.
Another contest one you don't want to win.
Yeah, exactly.
Dead Man's Chest was another one that I've just always loved. It's the tattoo one with the ancient tattooing, which I just loved watching.
Oh, is that like the rock star dude?
Yeah.
And like Tia Carrera?
Yeah. And you may not, your skin tells the story. Like you can't tell the guy what you want. He does it on you. Your skin tells the story. And the guy ends up with this elaborate demon on him, which if I remember correctly, bursts from his chest at the end.
Yeah. You know what's cool about those especially Tales from the Crypt, is the better way to identify is to say the star.
Yes.
You think about it. Of all of them, I can go, oh, you know the Kyle MacLachlan one, the Lance Henriksen one.
That's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, it's an easier way to go.
Oh, actually, no, Arnold directed one. He didn't star in one.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did direct one. And it's about a bodybuilder.
Oh, that's great.
That's why.
Because I also wrote down, I can't call it my favorite, but I'll say I'm always just so amused and enamored with it. Death of Some Salesman, which is the Tim Curry one.
Right. Because he plays every role.
Every role.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's so uncomfortable and weird and ugly and comedic and just bizarre, but it's one that I will never forget that as long as I live.
Yeah, I always remember the pilot episode, the Bill Sadler episode.
Oh,
It was a man who would be death, I think it is.
Yep, yep.
But only because he's doing this breaking the fourth wall, speaking directly to you as the narrator, taking you through the whole episode. And again, Walter Hill directed it. It's so tight and it's gorgeous.
Such an interesting group of creatives who are running that show. If you look at
Jules Silver, David Giler,
it's crazy. And Walter Hill. And you're like, and whoa.
Walter Hill,
what a crazy group of creative
you know what's
geniuses.
Fun? I think Walter Hill was on, was it Mick Garris' show?
Yeah, he talked to
him. And he explained
Or Mark Maron, it might have been for that one.
I think it was both.
Yeah.
He explained how that happened, how those guys all got
that dream team together.
Yeah, because I don't think they really worked together. It was just they were all associated to get it made in the first place.
Yeah.
So they kind of had nobody paying attention. Which, by the way, the Joe Pantaleone episode was directed by Richard Donner and it was called Dig That Cat, He's Real Gone. That was season 1, episode 3. And it's the one where Joey Pants gets 9 lives. He gets the experimental thing, and he works as like a carnival guy, and he keeps using up his lives. And then he's buried alive for this one last, you know, big payday.
That's a great ending.
Yeah.
One of the shows, and I've only seen one episode of your show, so I don't want to speak, but it had, because it had a sci-fi element to the episode I saw rather than just pure horror as a mixture. But it is, and it was only on one season. We've talked about it before, was Perversions of Science, which was a very short-lived show, but there's two episodes on that that I remembered so well, like better than most like bigger series. I remembered the, there's a Jeff Combs one called The Exile, which was really interesting. But the one that I really remembered was a Jason Lee episode where it's like War of the Worlds is being broadcast. It's like 1930 and it's like a Halloween party.
Right.
And they all freak out. And then I remember there being a really good twist. Like I remember a twist of, oh, they're actually here kind of moment.
Right.
I can't remember who the other actors, but it's like so funny. This that's just a show that had like one little season and yet it's
and that
very
was
memorable.
97 or so.
Really? Wow, I had never seen that as a kid. That was one of those DVDs we pulled on Amazon when we were doing research on the show a few years ago.
But vibe-wise, like those two, because I remember those two actually really well, those two episodes, and I don't remember the rest. Maybe I didn't even see the rest of them. Those two stuck out, and when I saw this one, I was like, oh, no, I could see almost a bit of a through line to the feel, but more modern, you know, which is good. But that's one I think people might have fun digging out. I don't know how the rest of them hold up.
Some of the other weird ones that I'll throw out. This one I mentioned, I want to say recently, I know I discussed it on Shockwave, Strange Frequency. And Strange Frequency ran for 2 seasons on VH1, and you can now buy the DVDs. They package them as movies. But really, they're just like 4 episodes put together. There were 12 episodes, or I'm sorry, it only ran for 1 season. 12 episodes, and they were going to release 3 DVDs with 4 episodes each. They only did the first 2, so the third one's kind of out there in the ether. If you're looking to check it out, it was a VH1 show, supposed to be really heavy into music. It's a horror anthology. If you're going to watch one episode, there's one called My Generation that's Eric Roberts playing a serial killer on the road, and he meets another serial killer, and you spend the whole episode trying to figure out who's going to kill each other first. And it's really smart and really fun.
That's great.
So definitely, if you can find it, check out Strange Frequency. The DVD is likely pretty cheap on Amazon.
I saw one that I'd never heard of, a series, and I still haven't seen it when I was looking it up today, and it was Henry Rollins as the host of Night Visions.
Night Visions.
What?
Is that any good? I had never seen it, but the same thing, I Googled that. I'm like, okay, it's got to go to the top
of my Rollins list. Henry Rollins as the narrator.
When did it run?
2001, and I was like,
"What's channel?"
I don't know. It's just
I've
never
crazy.
No idea. It just looked great. It was just like it was just like he was Rod
Probably
Serling.
Some weird network like CBS or something. Yeah, like that. Like, let's do something weird.
In terms of horror, like Mick Garris's, you know, Fear Itself series, I felt like had a couple gems in there.
Oh yeah, well
I
that was
the Larry Fessenden one.
Yeah, that's the unofficial like third season of Master of Horror.
Skin and Bones is that one you're talking about.
Yeah, the Larry Fessenden was great. I thought Stuart Gordon's killed it.
That's the one I wrote. Eater is to me like
that's
scary.
A really great one. And I remember his Stuart was the one that was excited about the challenge because you know obviously they did 2 seasons of Masters of Horror for Showtime where basically they could make. You know, movies however they wanted to with curses and, you know, whatever. And when they switched over to Fear Itself, which I think was what, ABC or one of those networks?
Yeah, it was the network.
Basically, the Masters of Horror guys, from what I understand, were like kind of like, oh no, now we're going to be restrained. And Stuart was the one that said, hey, but you know, Twilight Zone was on network television. So this is actually a great challenge for us as filmmakers because now let's take
restraints.
The restraints and use them to our advantage.
Sure.
And yeah, and I thought he killed it with his.
Yeah, I think that one's really effective. The actress from Mad Men, Peggy, who plays Peggy, is the lead in that one, and it's really creepy. But there's some good ones in there, I thought. Like, kind of underrated because it's not on a box set like Master Horror.
Yeah, has Fear Itself been released?
Yeah, it's on DVD. Okay. There is a DVD with all the episodes. And
do you guys have restrictions? Not so much creative, but like, are there restrictions being on Hulu? Because it seems like it's a Wild West out there.
You know, there were a few because we wanted the show to be rated TV-14. Which really has a lot to do with the paywall.
I wasn't even aware that Hulu had restrictions like that.
They do, and I don't know exactly the mechanism and the machinations behind logging into Hulu, but if you're a child under 18, it limits the content that you can have access to, and you need parental logins or something like that. So. We wanted it to be TV-14 so anybody could get in and check out the episode. So there were, you know, we had somebody getting shot in the face in that Impulse episode, like a gory Walking Dead style kill that we had to redo, which is a bummer. And I think our biggest restriction was we're only allowed to drop one fuck per episode. Mm.
Which, if it's an all-ages show, seems really liberal.
Right?
We only want them to hear fuck once. If it's twice, they might repeat it.
No, we always thought it was a fun challenge though, just to figure out where exactly you want to play that card.
Where are we going
to
put that fuck?
Yeah. Okay, give it to Patton Oswalt. Tell him, tell one of these guys to go fuck themselves. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's actually a great moment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'll throw a couple more lesser-known TV anthologies that I love. This one, I don't love the whole thing, but I definitely will mention it because I still think that the first two episodes may be some of the greatest television anthology ever is Darknet, which was a Canadian TV show. It ran for 6 episodes and then was canceled abruptly. The whole thing was created by Vincenzo Natali.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
And so apparently, and this is kind of rumor story, is that he had been developing this thing for years. And the whole concept of it is that there's this dark net where you go and you confess to killing, or you say, hey, I'm about to kill this guy. Here's the video. Other people can watch. And so the whole thing is kind of centered around this website. Each episode took about three to four different stories and wove them together. So you might have one girl who's doing this guy who's about to kill this, and you realize that this girl's being stalked. But then somehow they all weave together incredibly cleverly. Mm-hmm. Like the first two shows, I was like, this is genius. The end of the second show might be one of my favorite endings of television ever. Mm. And then it abruptly goes downhill. And supposedly, according to the rumors, was that he had spent like 2 years developing these first two episodes. And then somebody finally bought them and said, we need 3 more episodes by like next week. and so then it falls apart immediately.
So watch the first couple.
So watch the first few and you'll feel it when it falls apart. And you can stop right then because it doesn't really rebound. Oof. But yeah, the first two episodes of Darknet.
Is it as good as Fearnet? No. What's the William Malone one? Fear 101?
Fear.com.
It's way better. So yeah, it's worth it for the first few episodes of that. And if you're interested, I did an episode of William Bibbiani's show Canceled Too Soon entirely on Darknet, where we go through and break down each episode and find the pinpoint moment where the whole thing falls apart. Wow. Monsters was a show from the 80s, which I admittedly haven't revisited in a while, but I really enjoyed it when it was on. Did you guys watch that one?
Not when it was on, no. Yeah. I just revisited DVDs years ago. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really get into it. I think it's got a fun intro sequence with the miniatures and all the makeup work. Mm-hmm. It's so bizarre. It's unlike anything else.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in years, but I remember loving it when it was on.
I'm just curious, visually referenced, to see what that is.
Yeah,
Monsters.
I just remember loving it when it was on. So
it opens
think
with
that
this Simpsons-esque couch gag. Mm-hmm. And then it's revealed that the people on the couch are actually monsters. It's an alternate universe.
Right.
And they're watching sort of weird versions of us.
And whereas it definitely had much more of like a special effects bend to it. Like it was really a special effects heavy the entire show. And I have no clue how long it ran. I just remember really loving it when I was a kid.
Well, all 72 episodes are on 9 DVDs.
That's
that correct?
Wow, it ran for a while. I definitely did not watch it for that long.
Another one I'd like to have like a list of like these are the 10 best would be Night Gallery, because that's something, it's been a long time, but because it came, and I know it was hit and miss. I remember a couple really good, Hitchhiker one where it's basically Groundhog's Day. Like, so a hitchhiker is picked up and they are reliving something and none of them really understand why they keep doing the same thing, but they're in a loop. And it was very simple. I don't remember how it ended, but that one rings a bell, but it's very easy to get them mixed up with Twilight Zone.
Sure.
But I feel like, there's probably some really good stuff in there.
Any of you guys watch Mystery and Imagination? That one's like way old.
The British one?
No. The British one.
I remember being on TV when I was young.
We had video cassettes.
We got a lot of British stuff, more than American stuff, actually.
I remember my parents had video cassettes of it, and I remember watching it. And it was classic horror tales. So it did like Poe. I remember there was a Sweeney Todd episode, but I remember liking that one a lot as well. But yeah, the other one that I will throw out to is Darkroom from 1981, which I admittedly did not watch when it was on. Dave Parker showed it to me a couple of years ago, and I thought it was awesome.
Dark
I ended
room.
Up watching all of them. Dark Room.
You really dug deep.
Yeah. Well, and then the biggest one, which if you notice, I have like 6 exclamation points afterwards, is why aren't you motherfuckers watching Inside Number 9 yet?
Oh, what does that tell us about us?
Oh my God. I even gave you guys copies. Did you watch Inside
No,
Number
no,
Nine?
No, I have the copies.
Okay. Inside Number Nine. They are now on their third season. It's a British anthology show. It's a horror comedy. It's,
where can you see it?
You can watch the first season is now available on VOD on Amazon.
Please say Fandor.
Dear God, Kane.
It's been a while since
I haven't said that in a while. I still watch Fandor pretty regularly. But no, Inside Number Nine. I know that there's a lot of Shockwave listeners out there who have, you know, come
backing
forward
her up.
That are backing me and been like, guys, this is the best show. I can't believe you're not watching
it. We've got 3 weeks off after this.
I even gave them burned copies because we can't get the disc.
I never got a burned copy.
I gave one to Rob and one to Ryan.
See, that's the problem. You're giving it to the wrong people.
I gave them burned copies of the episode because they don't come in the U.S. region. So, yeah.
Don't blame me, Kane.
I even broke into Hulu to watch your show. I cost you money and ratings. You lost a rating.
Inside Number Nine, aside from Dimension 404, because Inside Number Nine is very different from what Dimension 404 is doing. It is by far the best horror anthology show I have seen in a really long time. So why aren't you fuckers watching it?
We will.
And it's not all horror. There are some that I'll just say are very dark or Hitchcocky, and they're all very dread-filled, I'll say that.
So. If you were doing more of your, is there a direction you'd like to push in after completing a first run? I mean, having not seen it, I don't know exactly where you push, but is there a direction you feel like you didn't get a chance to fully explore where you guys would like to go?
You know, we have a lot of stories that didn't make the cut for the first season. So, you know, tonally, we're still in the same place. I would love, honestly, if anything, just to get a couple more bucks to buy us a few more days because I really liked what we were doing with the show. It was just a grind.
How
banging
many days
those episodes
did you have for
out.
Most segments?
Those were 6 days.
Oh, my gosh.
Right.
And
6 days,
hour
long.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was special effects heavy.
So that for
men
the people
in creature
listening,
suits,
you would never
that would
think
be a
that,
9 day feature.
Child
like
actors.
If you think about it, that's an hour. So another 30 minutes would be 3 more days. So if you were shooting a feature in 9 days, which no one but Roger Corman, you know, back in the day would
It was and it was 6 episodes, so the equivalent of 3 features laid end to end. It was nuts.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And all different
but it doesn't show in the final product.
No, the final product, you can't see the budget. Like, I would not have guessed it was that.
Oh, we certainly killed ourselves pulling it together, yeah.
Wow. Does anyone remember The Hitchhiker from HBO?
Yeah. That was actually my favorite show.
Was it? I have no memory except for the opening theme, the opening. And I remember being creeped out by it, but I have no memory of the show
itself. I mean, I was like 10 or 11 when it was on, and it was like, it was probably more my Twilight Zone because it was on TV, and I just sit there watching it and I understood that it was mysterious and who's this guy. And I don't remember any of the particular episodes particularly well. It's like that werewolf show we talked about.
Fucking love
I remembered
werewolf.
That werewolf show really well.
It's not an anthology, but I love it.
Yeah, and that was canceled early, too. So
I only remember the wraparound in The Hitchhiker. Yeah, I can't remember any specific episode.
Yeah, not too much, but the song was good, and his hair.
There was no song.
But that's
all it was because after you guys were talking about it, I wanted to use it as a question at Dead Right Horror Trivia. And so I did TV show theme songs and I included that one. And it's literally howling and like clawing at
werewolf.
Things.
No,
it does not have an opening song.
Let's listen to this. That. Yes.
It's great.
Yes.
Whoa. I don't know if the mics are picking this up live. I pulled it up on YouTube.
Yeah, it's a really, that's a good
that's
track.
That's totally 80s synthie. I'm digging
it. I mean, this guy's got denim. It's 80s.
It's
sure.
denim. So denim.
It's denim in music form.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think he was a character in it, right? I mean, he was really only just like passing through, and then you would get the little narratives. But again, none of the actual stories particularly stand out now, all those years later.
Well, I don't know. It'd be fun to
but I do miss. I do miss. I wish there were more shows like that. Like, I loved back in the day when we were growing up, most TV was like that.
Yeah.
Felt
right.
You know? But Friday 13th, the series, I know it's not exactly fitting, but I think it really does because they're always just solving these different things that aren't connected to the next story. That show really, I saw it at the perfect age. I don't know if I saw the whole thing at the time, but the ones I saw really stuck with me. Like,
is
this is a great little show.
Friday 13th?
I thought
it was. It's somewhere right now.
I think Elric was just into Roby.
Yeah, I was big time into Roby, man. She's,
who wasn't?
She was my favorite Canadian. one word actress.
Now, did you say that you wanted to talk wraparounds? Because I don't remember too many wraparounds in
TV.
Too much of the TV stuff. I mean, other than obviously like Rod Serling always coming in and out of the show or Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Did I ever share that story? A family friend of ours is his dad was Buck Houghton, who co-created Twilight Zone with Rod. So the two of them were co-creators of that whole show. And he had a great story that he told me once, like growing up, that when they would do a script, the way it would work is Rod would come into the room and they'd have the whole script written, and he would perform the entire thing by himself, every single Twilight Zone script by himself in a room while the rest of them were in there. Rod Serling would perform the entire script. Wow. I was like, that is such a great story image to go through the script to see what it is. So like, to see if it was working. But he would perform it to them so they wouldn't even read it. They'd just sit there and he would just perform every. And I was like, oh, that's such a great, like, it really connects to why he worked so well in that series. And it was just one of those anecdotes I hadn't heard before. But, you know, he was a little kid remembering being in the room. And I was like, oh, that's really cool.
Sure.
Wow.
Because there's nothing better than Twilight Zone. I know we're not really going in depth on it, but that's partly because it made such a big impact on everyone.
Yeah.
And story-wise, culture-wise. I wish there was a smart version of that again, you know, if you're going to call it Twilight Zone again, instead of because like the Forest Whitaker hosted one, he's just not even
I've never seen
which
those.
One is
the revamped one.
The 80s version.
Oh, some of them
No, I think
okay.
they might even be 90s. There's three versions, right? There was like
You're right.
This
there's
is the
80s.
80s then, are okay.
But then there's the 90s.
The 90s are the ones that were real. They did a El Rey or something was playing them, and I recorded all of them going, oh, good. And I tried to watch like five or six, and man, by the end, I was like, you know what? There's almost nothing
I always
to
mix
hold
them
onto here.
Up with the 80s Outer Limits, which I actually think I prefer the 80s Outer Limits more than the 80s
there's
Twilight Zone.
There's a couple periods where Outer Limits was hitting some good stuff.
Yeah. According to the good old IMDb, the original show started in 59, then there was one in 85, and then the third one was 2002.
Okay, that's what we're talking about.
Right?
Yeah.
That
sounds
like
right.
The
I haven't
one?
Seen the most recent iteration.
That's the one we're talking about, because the 80s one, Forest Whitaker, wasn't around then. And the 80s, I remember being decent, but that's because we were of the age when it was on. I remember there being some good. That's the one where the button.
Brilliant. Button. There's an episode William Friedkin directed called Nightcrawlers. Which is sort of like a proto version of Bug. You see testing out that theory there. It's this guy shows up in a diner and he's a Vietnam vet and he's kind of going crazy. And the sheriff there thinks like, I don't know, is this guy going to be a problem? And it turns out that this guy's basically like PTSD war memories come real and start haunting everyone in this cafe.
Oh,
it's really, really.
I
want to
see that
It's so tight.
You're talking about the 80s Twilight Zone.
The 80s Twilight
not
Zone.
Not the Outer Limits. Okay, I got to look that one up.
And that does sound totally Bug.
No, and I only brought this up because if David Scow's listening, which hopefully he's not, he'll kill me, but I don't know the Outer Limits that well. However, Kino Lorber just announced that they're doing brand new HD masters on Blu-ray.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Coming late this year and then early next year of both seasons.
Yeah.
So that might be the way to finally experience the Outer Limits.
I don't know my old school Outer Limits nearly as well as my old school
There's
Twilight
a lot
Zone.
Of great Harlan Ellison scripted episodes.
Really?
Yeah. They're really terrific stories. Oh. The two famous soldier and what's the other? Demon with a Glass Hand, or the ones that are, you know, sort of most infamously or allegedly rather ripped off by James Cameron when he wrote The Terminator.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one I'm going to check out that I only saw one episode of this. And I've said on the show before, this Halloween, because everybody always does the 31 days and watch.
Sure.
I mean, we watch horror all the time anyway.
Yeah.
But this Halloween in October, I'm only watching horror anthology movies, one a day.
Oh, that's great.
I'm lining it up.
Are there 31?
What's that?
Are there 31?
I've got way more than 31.
Really?
I'm going to start mid-September. I've already made a list. I'll show you.
Yeah, I'm curious.
But TV-wise, and I have this on DVD, was Stephen King's Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
Mm-hmm.
Like seven episodes, I think. They're just based on short stories.
It was only one season, or was it two seasons?
It's just one season and eight episodes.
Okay.
Well, not really episodes. They almost all felt like little mini movies, if I remember correctly. The only one I saw was the first episode, which was
Battleground.
Yes.
Were they all
exactly.
Stephen King stories, or were they just assorted writers?
Some, mostly
based on, right?
Yeah, based on. Although this first one, Battleground, says Richard Matheson and Stephen King.
Wow.
So,
well, wait,
know.
That's confusing.
Richard,
but okay.
What's it called?
Richard
Christian Matheson.
It's
Christian.
Richard Matheson's son. Yes.
Okay.
That's the one I meant. But yeah, I have no memory of it, and I don't hear much people talk about it. So
I remember that episode. It's what I specifically remember is that it's William Hurt. He's an assassin.
Yep.
It's 52 minutes long, and there isn't a single word of dialogue spoken the entire episode.
Oh. Wow.
Not one word. It's very intense.
There's toy soldiers in it or something.
It basically becomes toy soldiers. Yeah. So the quick plot is.
it opens with him and sort of like this proto version of his character from History of Violence, and he assassinates this world-renowned toy maker, and then he receives a package back at his home from – it looks like it came from the toy maker. And inside is a collection of army men and tanks and helicopters, just little little green men toys and whatnot. And then they come to life, and it's literally – it was like 30, 40 minutes of him battling – these plastic toys, like toy soldiers. Huh. It's insane.
Huh. Wow. Well, I'm going to break that one out and check out that series because I'm hoping there's some gems in there.
Do you remember a Bruce Willis doppelganger episode of Twilight Zone in the 80s? I have this really firm memory, and I wonder if I'm imagining it, but I remember there's two Bruce Willises.
I remember that he's in one of them, but okay. I don't remember what the story was.
I'm going to have to look that one up because I remember that's the period where I was introduced to the color, so it was definitely the 80s. Twilight Zone before the black and white ones, you know. So I one of my firmest memories is him playing like a doppelganger character and it being really good. So I got to track down the 80s ones to see if they kind of hold up.
I have them on DVD. You're welcome to borrow them, but it'll be like 9 years till you watch them.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's true.
I'll just give them to you in 9 years.
Could it be Shatter
You're under
Day?
My Hack-A-Lantern rewatch. What's that?
It could be Shatter Day.
Is Bruce in that?
I think so. I mean, I just Googled Bruce Willis, Twilight Zone.
Oh, well, yeah, if there's a Bruce Willis, I'm sure he's only in one. Because I don't think there was a lot of episodes made in that, the 80s ones. I think it's only a handful of episodes.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Directed by Wes Craven.
Oh,
and the
wow.
The episode is Shatter Day.
Weird.
Nice.
Oh, that's worth taking a look at.
Yeah, yeah. Go back to.
Wow.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, this is one where hopefully people are writing down some of them.
Yes, please write down these.
And recommending to us.
Yeah.
We should be checking out.
And yeah, please let us know if we've missed any titles that we definitely need to be checking out. I'm always looking for weird ones that I haven't seen
before. Let me know. Tales from the Dark Side, the one that is the most curious to kind of go back into, but I do probably need a guide because I don't think I'm ready to go, you know, film by show.
I wouldn't go in on a blind date on that, but I'll say if you like Creepshow, really nails that easy comics vibe.
Which is, it's so good.
Yeah.
I remember, there was another one that was, the images of it were coming to me, but now it's gone. I think I'm just going to have to jump in. What one we didn't talk about was, is it Abracadabra? The one of, where the guy switched bodies and he's trapped in the dead body.
Oh, that's a great one.
That's a really, I can't remember who was in that.
That's
the guy from Ghost,
from
the bad guy from Ghost is in that one.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that I remember that being a really effective, creepy, because that's also the EC vibe too. I got what I wanted, but now I'm trapped in the dead, you know.
Because you're the POV of the dead guy, but he's not dead.
Yeah, that was a really interesting one.
Yeah, there were so many good ones.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, you could do that for Halloween, too. I could imagine someone just doing all TV anthology. That would be pretty
cool.
There'd
be so many to
watch. Best episode of each anthology.
But start with, I have to start now and watch the other 5 episodes of your show.
Yes.
And so we're going to give you
absolutely. The start there and finish there.
So we're going to give you the Hulu code so you can hack it right now.
That's the only way to see it. You can have my login.
So at this point, have they announced anything future with the show? Or for now, just check out the 6 episodes and keep talking about how much
we
love it online?
We're just now having that conversation.
Wouldn't it be nice if it spiked right now for you, right as you're going into negotiation?
Like suddenly Hulu is like, oh, dude, the show just exploded.
Yeah.
So
I'm not ashamed to say this, but when I leave the house, I always throw the TV on for my dogs just to give them some noise. I always put my own show on just to get a few extra clicks.
Nice.
Totally.
So whether you're interested or not, please just everyone turn on Hulu at once. Let's crash the site.
Crash it. Dimension 504.
And give them a second season because there can never be enough to anthology horror, you know?
Yeah, no, and I really did love them. I thought they were really terrific.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
So. Des, thank you so much for coming on and joining us
today.
Oh,
man, you guys are the best. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. Thank you. And we will be back in 3 weeks. We'll have some bonus episodes here and there.
Let's not date it.
Yeah.
We will be back.
We'll be
promise.
Back soon.
Yes.
In the meantime, you will get little snippets of the 4 of us.
Yeah, fun
and,
stuff.
And you can probably find all the weird other episodes of other shows we have all done in the last couple weeks.
This is your time to catch up on all our other shows.
Other podcasts. Yeah, definitely.
Until you're sick of us. Thank you.
Yeah. All right,
we'll see you
have
soon.
A good summer.
Thanks, guys.